Let's get it going. It's time to get up.
You don't get to repeat it. It may never happen again because it escaped you the last 32 years. I'm saying to me, I don't give a damn. I got to go on the field and stand away from people. I'm not leaving that stadium.
These guys are here to break it all down.
The NBA continues to want to start playing before Christmas, around December 22nd, 72 games. That would take them right up to the Olympics in July, and they'd be done. Let everybody go play in the Olympics, not have to go up against the Olympics on TV.
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
God, I'm going to kill this guy when I get off the phone.
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
How you doing, everybody? It is Thursday, October 29th. What's going on? James Cebulski, Perry Solkowski, your starting lineup here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Greg Ballack on the other side of the glass, kicking it with you until 9 o'clock this morning. Lots to get to over the next 3 hours. Lots to chew on. Major League Baseball throwing Justin Turner under the bus, and understandably so. Brian Burke drops by in an hour with his weekly thoughts here on the show as well. And we'll also check in with Canucks insider Ian McIntyre just after 8 o'clock, where there's a healthy dose of Canucks news here this morning. Pear, how are you? You're 2 days away from Halloween, and you're not a Halloween guy. Do you have any sort of good vibes in the air this morning?
Good vibes. I just took the dog outside. It's nice today.
Yeah, it is nice.
I'll take that. I'll take my weather as vibe number one. I was thinking last night, here I am. I'm proud of the willpower that I show at this time of year because, you know, like anybody else, there's nothing wrong with buying Halloween candy starting a couple weeks out. And then, you know, you have to load up again the day before. I have purchased none. My daughter, who spends time in a school, has brought several home from students and making sure she has some for them. Weak willpower is what my wife's all about because all the Reese's Pieces were gone. And I kind of bragged yesterday. I haven't touched any of that stuff. I haven't stuffed any of that bad stuff. And then I just eat crappy, healthy chips but have six bags of it. Now I'm feeling okay. Like, I'm not as pumped up as the Cebulski house. I had my last opportunity to golf yesterday. I canceled. And now I'm looking to do anything with Jack Nicklaus. I'm selling and burning like a lot of people in North America. But hey, it's a Thursday. I'm ready to rock.
So in case you missed it in the last 10 hours, Jack Nicklaus came out in support of Donald Trump and backed his play. I'll say this. Okay, so on the surface, it's a bad look. Right? Like, it's a bad look, I think, for a lot of people. I think on this side of the border, a lot of, you know, I think the majority of this country would not side with the politics of Donald Trump. Nevertheless, Jack taking a lot of criticism. Cam Cole was especially critical. There's a lot of people actually who've been very critical of Jack Nicklaus and his support and his views. But I'm going to channel my inner Bill Burr here for a second, Pear. Mm-hmm. Like, should we be surprised over the fact that an 80-year-old man endorses a Republican president? A guy who is probably, without question, the most divisive president in my lifetime. Like, should we be surprised that an 80-year-old white guy has gone down that road? Go Google Bill Burr and Donald Sterling, and there's your answer.
Yeah, and you have been of the theory that there's a lot of Trump supporters out there. They're just keeping it quiet. So to be honest, last night before I go to bed and I'm looking what's going on, I see Jack has posted something about make sure you go out and vote. I'm going to excellent because I have just taken for the most part in the last 3 months, any celebrity saying, hey, by the way, make sure you get out there and vote are probably saying, guys, you know, if we don't want this, we got to make sure we exercise our right. That's why we're here. But so I didn't even read Jack's post. But I mean, he goes in, if you don't want to evolve into socialist America, you have a government that's going to run your life. I strongly recommend Donald Trump, who has done a lot of business deals with Jack. And some think, well, Trump might be designing golf courses in a week's time. Maybe the partnership goes. But yeah, you're right. There's Jack in Ohio, a state that's pro-Trump. Trump, the golf business. They've probably known each other a long time. But boy, there was when Jack was winning the U.S. Opens and Jack was in a Masters, there was no social media. I hope Jack and Barbara aren't sitting around today reading social media because he's getting lit up.
You know, but do you not find, do you find you sour on somebody you admired or liked and they come up with an unpopular view on things? I remember going back, I think it's got to be about 15 years ago. Like, I've always been an Ice Cube fan, or for a long time I was. You know, I was a big NWA fan as a teenager. And I remember him doing the talk show circuit. He was on, I think, Carson Daly. You know, tells you how long ago it was.
Yeah.
And Ice Cube had just filmed a movie called Are We There Yet? And they filmed it up here.
Yep.
And I remember him talking about, oh, you filmed a movie in Vancouver. And he's like, yeah, you know, wasn't a huge fan. Rains too much. And just kind of cracked on the city. Like, yeah, I want to get back to America. And Carson Daly was dating, I think, Tara Reid at the time. And she, I think, had been filming something up here at the time as well. And he kind of doubled down on it, like, yeah, you know, I spent some time visiting Tara up there, and yeah, it wasn't really my jam either. But Cube kind of ripped on Vancouver. I remember just kind of sitting there, man, screw you. That's home. That's my quarterback. You know, like, that was kind of, I don't like that. You're ripping on my town.
Well, how about the...
This is the next level, though, right?
Sure, the cast of Riverdale. Didn't they complain it rained all the time? Let's go back to Othello Harrington. As the Grizzlies, you know, you just gets personal. Oh, you're ripping into your town. Hey, you get into your sports stars and all that, and you get into the politics. It's so divisive right now. You don't need to hear it. I know, you know, an ex-colleague of ours, Cam Cole, went on social media to say, man, I mean, Cam was the ultimate. Loved Augusta, played Augusta, loved the Masters, loves golf, and was a Jack Nicklaus guy. And just, oh, but that's the world we live in. So we will see how everything plays out in the next 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, we're less than a week away. It feels too quiet right now with the election looming. Like, there's nothing really inflammatory. I don't know.
Because it's been inflammatory for 4 years. Like, what else can be said?
I was going to say that and maybe the fact that, like, COVID cases
it's
are
been
just,
like WrestleMania for you for 4 years. Like, every day there's a new character. There's well,
and,
going
and
on.
Honestly, I remember saying this 4 years ago to people. I was like, he talks like a wrestling villain. We're going to make America great again.
He did some
work
for you guys, didn't he? And I say you guys like you're part of the WWE. But that fit Trump, like that role.
Dude, as a kid, and it's funny, I remember talking to my daughter about this the other day, but I knew who Donald Trump was in 1988 because WrestleMania was at Trump Casino in Atlantic City, like back-to-back years. Like, you think about how that guy has been, you know, in the mainstream for the last 30 plus years. Like, I was 13, I knew who Donald Trump was, right? And that's 30 plus years ago. Now he's the president of the United States. So everybody knows who he is now. But yes, he was a fixture in wrestling for a long time. There was a WrestleMania event going back, 12, 13 years ago in Detroit. I was there to cover opening day for the Blue Jays and the Tigers that year in 2007. And it just coincidentally, WrestleMania was there. So my producer, who was also a big wrestling fan, Steve Argentero, had said, hey, you want to go? And I was like, does a bear poop? Let's do it. And that was Vince McMahon and Donald Trump putting their hair on the line. Who's ever wrestler wins a match. And Trump was threatening to shave his head. Of course he didn't shave his head, but oh yeah. Yeah, he's been around that wrestling ring. He's a Hall of Famer for the crying out loud with the WWE.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's in the celebrity. He's in the celebrity wing, they call it.
David Letterman doing, he had to apologize to Donald Trump, but Letterman back in his head, he wasn't apologized to anything because he had said something that offended him. But Letterman said, man, I used to love Donald coming on here. He wears red tie, the big dumb hair. He's so stupid and blah, blah, blah. And Letterman just absolutely annihilates him. He just goes, man, I forgot that was David Letterman. He wasn't apologizing for anything. And Donald wasn't happy with what he said. He said, I'm not coming on. And Letterman just buried him the next day on the show. Interesting stuff. Jono, who texts us every morning, good morning to you. Jono says in his school next week, they're breaking down the U.S. election. It'll be interesting. There's some Trump supporters in his class. So there you go. It's a good learning tool for everybody.
Oh, it's you know, it only took 5 minutes into the show this morning to tell us to stick to sports. And text coming in at 650. Imagine riding with Biden. Stick to sports. There we go. I wonder if Dave from Victoria, who also kind of wishing us a nice Thursday morning, he dealt with Mike Weir in the past pair. I wonder if he had any Jack experiences. I feel like most people's experiences with Jack have been positive, though.
Jack's always been good with people.
That's Jack, the thing, right?
You know, Jack was kind of, you know, Arnie had his army, and Jack was just a guy who never did anything. You know, lived a pretty clean life, Jack did, with his family and his kids and how they played the game. And hey, a very successful businessman. I would be interested. There are some, like, there's a lot of people that wouldn't go to the Trump Hotel. But I would be interested, with Jack Nicklaus and his golf courses all over North America, if some people take it that far and go, yeah, I'm not going up to Whistler to play anymore. I think there will be some people that would be that far. I don't know if I take it that far, but it's interesting that in the U.S.
You're not turning down a free, turning down a free tea time up at Nicholas North.
No, listen. Exactly.
I'm probably not either. What Jack did. It's wrong what he said. You got free round up there. Okay. I'll see you there on Friday.
Yeah, we're not talking politics, but I'll tee it up. Anyway, we play early and get 36 in. Yeah, that's my breaking point, free golf. But I'm curious if people will say I'm not going there to support it anymore.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. Hotels. You know, hey man, without there will be some. Sure, absolutely. I'm sure there will be some, right? And I'm sure there will be some saying, "You tell them, man." Well said, Jack. Right? Like there's going to be both sides of the equation, right? Like at the end of the day, we know that Donald Trump's going to get millions of votes next week, right? Like that's, you know, even if he gets his ass kicked. Like, Donald Trump is still going to get millions and millions of votes on Election Day next week. Well, anyway, I'm sure it'll come up over the course of the morning, but something else to get into, and that is the future of Travis Greene. Man, it hasn't been a busy enough offseason, Pair. Travis Greene's situation going into the final year of his four-year contract that he signed with the Canucks a few years ago. Well, now all of a sudden, that has become a story based on what was said last night on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, our sister station in Calgary, according to their Pacific Division insider, Jonathan Davis, who was based in Los Angeles. Listen to what he said about things maybe hitting a bit of a pothole a la Jacob Markstrom, this time for Travis Greene and the Canucks.
They've got a coach that's in the final year of his deal. And, you know, from my sources on the management side, negotiations are not off to a great start.
And that's with Travis Greene. Tell us a little bit more about that and the fact that this guy's been pretty good for him. He's really made his mark as head coach. And now all of a sudden we're not hearing the greatest things about a contract extension for him.
Yeah. And you know, look, this is a coach that his team has, you know, the Canucks have, you know, increased their win total each of his three seasons there. I'm not really sure what's going on. You know, the big issue, from my understanding, is term. It's not dollars. I think, you know, Travis Greene would you know, wants a lot more security than what the Canucks are have initially offered. And, you know, look, sometimes the first offer isn't the best one, but this first offer, from my understanding, was one that, you know, people, even on the management side, were kind of scratching, you know, their heads. And we're surprised that, you know, that there wasn't a better offer made for Travis Greene.
So there's Jonathan Davis suggesting that negotiations aren't off to a great start for the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, who I guess all he needs to do is call Chris Tanev or Jacob Markstrom or Tyler Toffoli or Troy Stetcher for that matter. But this is suddenly a thing now, Pear.
Well, are coaches any different than players when we look at Taylor Hall and what he's trying to get and the market? I mean, the money's all coming from the same place. The money is coming where there's no revenue stream. I will go and say that in the 20-plus years I have covered this hockey team, my first reaction to the worst contract ever held out by this organization was when they signed John Tortorella to 5 years. To me, that made absolutely no sense. Travis Greene, in a position of power, has put this team on the right track. And, you know, Brian Burke, who coined the phrase lame duck GM with the last year of his contract, he'll join us at 7 o'clock. I would think they have get it done. We're asking in a poll question, what do you think is fair, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? I don't think Travis is trying to hit that home run money-wise, but I think he's going, hey, I put a lot into these guys. I want to be here for the next 5 years, and I would suggest he's got some argument. But also, tough to give long-term security when your bosses are going, we don't know where we're getting people coming back. I don't know if we can go that far. So disappointing to hear that this has come out, because you should be able to get this one done quietly. and rejoice rather than go, oh, yeah, we got him, rather than, oh, are you kidding me? Because you don't want Travis Green behind the bench without having to deal with him.
Well, I would say this. It's a win for Travis Green if you're selling with your stock high. Case in point, Mike Babcock, Barry Trotz. Now, those guys both had Stanley Cup rings, but, you know, your contract expires, test the market, and you are having success. That could be a win for Travis Green. I don't mind that if he's going to bet on himself. Here's the one question, and we can get into this a little bit more in a little bit. We've got Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast waiting patiently here. We'll get to him in just a quick second. But here's the other thing. What's the shelf life of a Bovista coach, Pear? Like, Travis just had 3 years going into year four with this team, right? Like, is Travis Green going to be here in another 5 years from now?
Yeah, but what were we looking at 2 years ago?
That's 9 years as the head coach, right?
Yeah, shelf life of his voice, but think how there's new ears hearing it. You know, if you take this Canucks defense from 2 years ago, Alex Edler's the only guy on the blue line that's left from 2 years ago. So the voice is new to Quinn Hughes. The voice will be new to Nate Schmidt. You know, Pettersson hasn't heard it for a long time. For some, those veterans, it's gone. So, I think he'd be looking for 5 years. I'd have a tough time handing that much up for coaches. Right now, most people say 3 years is the sweet spot. I think Travis wants more than three, and perfect time for him to negotiate.
I understand the logic on both sides, and I think you want to go much more than 3 years on any contract right now for a coach. I mean, how do you think Florida's feeling right now with the $6 million they're committed to for, what, a half dozen years with Joel Quenneville at the moment? Mm-hmm. How did it work out for Mike Babcock in Toronto with the 8 years? Anyway, Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast. Jumping into a Travis Green conversation, and we'll change gears as we look ahead to week number 8 in the National Football League. How are you, man?
I'm doing well this morning, gentlemen. Let's be honest here. Job security in the NHL shouldn't be guaranteed. I mean, they signed me year to year, and I'm having as many Stanley Cups right now as Travis Green does as a head coach.
That's fair. Okay. Tell me this. We were talking about this yesterday here in the BC Lottery Corporation. They're saying, like, the biggest event that is going to be wagered on their website's history is next week's U.S. presidential election. What's that market look like for you guys right now for betting?
Well, that's the interesting part, and I think the main reason that you guys are seeing such a groundswell of support from a betting standpoint there is you can't legally bet the presidential or any federal elections down here in the States. So even with legalization taking hold across the country, that's one of the markets that is strictly prohibited. West Virginia actually had a stay of execution that lasted about 13 minutes where they were able to take bets on the presidential election. But I've talked to some of my colleagues internationally as well. And to put things in perspective, the Flutter Group, who operates the Betfair Exchange, said in 2016 they were nowhere close to what they were now. We've already surpassed the money that's been exchanged already, and we still have roughly a week to go. And if 2016 was any indication, 70% of the betting handle they did came the day of through live trading and everything else. So all eyes will be on the U.S. For all the wrong reasons comes next Tuesday to see if Donald Trump gets reelected or we have a fresh face in office.
Yeah, I couldn't believe those kind of numbers are here at our BC Lottery Corporation. I'm not going to say anything, but at 6-1 last week, Furman, I'm back at it, right? I'm on a roll, I struggle, now I'm back at it. Let's start with tonight. Christian McCaffrey not playing for Carolina on this Thursday night, or is that the word out?
Generally, that's the thought process around here. We know he was in the red non-contact jersey earlier in the week. Matt Rhule has been pretty mums about his availability. I have to imagine we'll get an announcement in the next couple of hours that he will or won't be available. But you look at the way this number has trended down. I'm of the mindset that they're going to take the wait-and-see approach, give Christian a little bit more time. Mike Davis has been more than suitable as a fill-in, and when you look at what Davis did both as a runner and receiver in the first meeting between these two teams, clearly Christian brings an element that Davis can't provide, but he hasn't been a slouch filling in. And you look at Carolina, one of the surprise stories, sitting at 3-4 with a brand new coaching staff and a lot of new faces in 2020.
What do you like in that game?
For me, I would lean towards the Atlanta Falcons here, and I'm not bullish on it by any stretch of the imagination. Atlanta has actually been one of those teams that's performed a lot better from a point spread perspective when they go out on the road than what we've typically seen in the Georgia Dome. And you look at their receiving core, I think, excuse me, they're going to put a lot of pressure on the Carolina Panthers defense. Calvin Ridley has had some tremendous performances against them, and with a healthy Julio Jones, it makes him that much even more difficult to defend. Plus, Carolina would not be stunned at all if they're a little bit hungover from the heartbreak that they suffered at the hand of the Saints. That being said, let's not kid ourselves. Atlanta invented yet another way to lose a tight football game last Sunday against the Lions.
Todd Furman here on Sportsnet 650. Do you need a test? Do you need to go get tested right now?
You know what? I tested positive back in late June, early July, so I'm
Seriously?
Hoping I don't need another test. I don't want to be one of those handful of cases for reinfections down here in the state.
Did you really?
Yeah, unfortunately, my girlfriend does a lot of fitness coaching, and they had a little bit of an outbreak at her studio. So we were under wraps for about a month, and let me tell any of the listeners out there, it's not a pleasant experience, but we counted our lucky stars that we were pretty fortunate and had no long-term, at least for now, health consequences from our COVID experience.
I had no idea. I'm sorry, man.
It's all good. Hey, the worst is behind me, and my running joke here, at least to my friends and family, is I had H1N1 a few years ago, add COVID to the list now. I figure there's two more flu-like variants out there before I can hit for the lifetime cycle.
Yeah, and I'm sure relatives would go, hey, Todd, what are the odds that you would get that, right? Ha, ha, ha.
Well, yeah, I mean, Per, I mean, we have Thanksgiving coming up in a few short weeks, and it is one of a major betting holidays that we put on the calendar in the Furman household. There's all sorts of over-unders, eating challenges, and a myriad of other ways. So if we can bet on illness as well, just another sweetener to the grand scheme of things.
You're like the guy who got struck by lightning all those times in the movie The Great Outdoors, I think.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out so well for John Candy. May he rest in peace.
Oh, yes, exactly. All right, so hey, looking ahead to the weekend, Ravens and Steelers. I mean, that's probably our heavyweight matchup for the weekend. How do you see this one playing out?
I think this is a fascinating game, and when you look at these two teams from a big-picture perspective, I think the Steelers check a lot of boxes for a team that's going to be a legitimate threat to Kansas City in the AFC if they're going to get a chance to play for the Lombardi Trophy. However, this particular weekend, I think all of the tactical advantages, the rest, the situation – all work in Baltimore's favor. You have a Ravens team coming into this contest with 2 weeks to prepare. Last year in a similar spot against an undefeated team, albeit in primetime, they took New England to the woodshed as a 3.5-point home underdog and showed us, hey, look, that they were going to be legitimate contenders. The last time we saw Baltimore in a game of this magnitude, they kind of laid an egg for, you know, a lack of a better term, against Kansas City. They closed as a 3.5-point favorite, were never competitive from start to finish. So when I look at John Harbaugh and know that he's 9-3 against the spread, 10-2 straight up coming out of a bye, I have a feeling this Baltimore defense will be extremely aggressive getting after Big Ben with their number one blitz rate. And we're going to see the Ravens passing attack look a little bit more dynamic than it has so far this season, considering Lamar Jackson has failed to throw for more than 200 yards in 4 out of his 6 starts.
Tua time in Miami. What will that do to anything?
I think it'll create a little bit more buzz and intrigue for some of the NFL purists out there. You did see a wave of support yesterday come in on the Miami Dolphins. That number got as high as 4, 4.5. We'll call it 3.5, the consensus right now. The Rams in the unenviable spot of flying across the country on a short week on the heels of a dominant performance on Monday night. Probably not quite sure what to expect from Tua in his NFL starting debut. And you look at this Miami team, let's not sleep on the fact that the Dolphins at 3-3, still very much in contention for a wild card spot in the AFC. And if Buffalo continues to go through some of this offensive malaise that we've seen, maybe the Dolphins can be a dark horse to win the division. Tua, in my opinion, gives them a higher ceiling as a team, but at the same time, I don't think he gives them nearly as high of a floor as we've seen with Ryan Fitzpatrick the first 6 weeks.
Did you see that story about the bettor on DraftKings who missed out on a $1 million win because of an altered stat on a sack?
You know, honestly, James, I saw that story and I was trying to figure out exactly how that works. Let's not kid ourselves, we'd all be gutted. But wasn't that more or less the exact way that Michael Strahan was able to achieve the sack record when Brett Favre gave himself up in the backfield? Yeah. I'm not quite sure how that works, but I would be going to bed that night pretty angry, and I'm not sure I would cool off 8 to 9 hours later.
That's a tough thing to bet on. You're right, because it's a lot of a judgment call.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And one thing, you know, as far as DraftKings, FanDuel, and some of the other daily fantasy sites, they're at the mercy of the official stat keeper. So for those folks, I know there was a contingent saying, oh, they just didn't want to have to pay this out. It's not them that ultimately make the decision. It's the NFL and the official stats there. It's just a horrific beat, and I've suffered plenty in my career. None of them even come close to what that daily fantasy player must have experienced.
Thank you for this. I always feel a little more confident if I'm going to throw a dollar on the Thursday nighter and we're in agreement. But I got the Panthers, so we'll see.
All right. Well, Per, I do have to ask you that. I mean, since you didn't put me on the spot, who wins the big game down there in Seattle with the Seahawks coming in off a heartbreaking loss on Sunday playing host to the 49ers? I'm putting you on the spot. I'm doing the interviewing this time around.
Well, I have to tell you, I had the Cardinals last week because the Seahawks just been winning too many tight games. But I think what they have done, how they've added to their team, whether they see Dunlap or not, I'm surprised the 49ers have been that good. But I don't think Russell Wilson loses twice. He owned that once that he threw a couple of bad picks. I think the Seahawks bounce back.
They've had great numbers when you look at how Russ has performed against the 49ers. The biggest concern I have with the Seahawks, and I'm not sure it'll show up this week, but maybe going forward, they have no resume-defining win right now. I mean, you look at the strength of schedule that they and wins that they've produced, a lot of inferior football teams. So it'll be interesting to see if they can put together a complete game against the divisional team that seems to be finding their swagger in the 49ers. And that should clearly be the marquee game of the afternoon slate.
Russ had an off night last Sunday night, and he still threw for close to 400 yards and 80 yards rushing. I don't think he's going to have a second consecutive off night at the Kling coming up this weekend. Thanks,
there is no doubt that he is every bit the value in terms of MVP, and that's why you've seen his number shrink to right around even money in the wake of a three-interception performance. He clearly is the straw that stirs the drink, and it's always fun to watch the Seahawks offense, knowing that the defense up to this point hasn't been able to get stopped, so Russ gets to sling it for four full quarters.
Let Russ cook, man. You stay safe and keep washing those hands. I'm wishing the best for you because your string of luck isn't necessarily...
I'm getting choked up. I get emotional when I get to talk to you guys every Thursday morning.
Stay safe, my friend. Talk to you next Thursday.
Stay firmer.
Be good, guys. Good luck with those picks, Pear.
You too, brother. All right, thanks, there man. He is, Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast here on Sportsnet 650. 26 minutes after 6 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. Brian Burke joins us just after 7 o'clock. He's Perry. I'm James. The NHL threw out asking you who your top five Canucks are of all time. Is it as easy as it is to just list them off? We'll get into that next, right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
All right, 6:31 on this Thursday morning. Here's quite the start to the day. Perry, you'll appreciate this. Health Canada just issuing a recall for hand sanitizers from Dollarama stores across the country this morning.
Didn't have a don't wash your hands. Wasn't actually doing the job.
Well, I guess there's just saying that there's a warning issued this morning saying that the products may have been sold at Dollarama. They were sold in different forms, including gels, wipes, and liquids from the brand Daily Shield. And on the label, they say about 70% alcohol.
When we are in our new world in a year's time, I hope hand sanitizer is still as prevalent as it is now. It's not a bad thing at all, right?
Yeah.
Wash your hands.
Could cause serious health issues. How about that? Could cause serious health issues, including dermatitis, eye irritation, upper respiratory serious irritation, and headaches. So, yeah, methanol could even cause deadly adverse reactions. So don't wash your hands with this stuff.
Just be careful. Just be careful.
Safety first, right? Because safety never takes a holiday. So the National Hockey League came out with a list yesterday of your top five Canucks of all time. Who are your top five Canucks? And look, top five lists have become all the rage since the movie High Fidelity with John Cusack and Jack Black really kind of got the party rolling. And pretty much this sums up for how many of us feel when we actually pick a list.
So you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars, so you're shit on the people who know less than you.
No.
Which is everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
The usual suspects usually come up when it comes to your Canucks top five, right? Twins, Pavel, Trevor, Nazzy, Smeal, Luongo, and already some love for Pettersson and Hughes. But first, I think you can't go with Elias Pettersson or Quinn. They just haven't played enough, right? Petey needs to score more or produce more points to be in that conversation, I think. The same with the mighty Quinn. You're on the right track. They certainly are. But I think if your list includes Pettersson and Hughes right now, you're disqualified.
You're fired!
Then when you're trying to rationalize your top five, there's the complicated issue of how they handled themselves off the ice. Can you include someone on your all-time list if it ends with a bad breakup? Look at Pavel Bure. He was alleged to have held the club up in the Stanley Cup in 1994, demanding a new contract, and then ultimately demanded to be traded in 1998, which was ultimately granted. Does that behavior warrant a top five all-time spot? But then again, there's no more dynamic or talented a player in team history than the Russian Rocket.
Bure going in! He scores! Pavel Bure has won it for the Vancouver Canucks!
Now, speaking of complicated, 7 years ago, Bobby Lou, Roberto Luongo, stated,
"My contract sucks."
And now here in 2020, he's still right as the Canucks deal with a $3 million recapture payment on their salary cap after he retired last season in Florida. Look, Lou wanted to go back home with the family. He is without question the club's greatest goaltender, but when you hurt the team as much as he has in a three-year period, that's tough to overlook. Ryan Kesler, Nashville people, right? That's all you got to say. Nashville, am I right? Warrior, prick, tenacious. 40 goals. Best years here. Career ends because his body quit on him because of the intense miles he logged specifically in Van City. But he also kind of quit on this franchise when the city began to collapse from a team standpoint. He's making peace now, but again, top five, not so much. You know, Tony Tanti, there's a name to consider. Scored 39 or more goals in five straight seasons. But when you look at the playoffs, failed to carry that scoring touch over. He had just 3 goals in 30 career playoff games. So here we are, some parameters. I have a tough time with people that pooched the franchise. D's got some heroes, but I don't think anyone's entering the Hall of Fame. So are you putting Oland or Lume or Jovo up there? Probably not. Sorry, Eddie. Twins, they got to be on it. No two ways about it. They check all the boxes. You have to flip a coin between Naslin and Linden. Those two, they both have 630-goal seasons. Trevor has the cup run and was excellent. Nazzy has an MVP in the eyes of his peers. You know what? Personal preference, just the years that I spent covering Nazzy, I'll take Marcus Naslin. Next two, I've got to overlook the bad, and I'm putting Pavel on the list. So that leaves one last spot. All right, the one last spot, and I'm going to give forgiveness, and I'm going to take Roberto Luongo because this town, quite simply, was a goalie graveyard outside of two seasons before Bobby Lou came to town. Yes, his 2011 run was even a bit awkward at times, but he is the greatest puck stopper in team history, and it's not even close.
Rebound! Oh, what a save! Luongo just robbed Ben Eager. That's unbelievable.
So if I'm picking the all-time favorite Canucks here personally, give me Trent Klatt, Jarkko Ruutu, Brendan Morrison, Ed Jovanovski, and Henrik Sedin. But if you're going top five all-time, it's Daniel, it's Henrik, it's Nazzy, Luongo, and the Rocket. Because, well, there's a gear that really has only ever been matched by Connor McDavid in league history. There's my top five this morning, Pierre.
Well, so you actually gave us two top fives at the end. You gave your personal favorites, and you gave your all-time favorites. Of those 10 players mentioned, you didn't mention Bertuzzi, so now we're screwed every Tuesday morning at 7 because you won't have him. Could you not have slid him in somewhere?
I didn't get Berkey on that list either, so.
I've spent way too much time, and you and I were texting last night, go, okay, what is your top five? And you just explained it there. I think it is such personal preference, and what are the parameters of it? Because if I need five guys to put on a uniform to win a game for me, one game, and they were Canucks, and I don't care how everything turned out, I'll tell you, Bert's on that list in a heartbeat. But if I've got to go all-timers, like, this is what I want. This is what I need you guys to be like in life. Wear this uniform with pride. Leave the rink. Treat people the right way. There's absolutely no way you could not have Henrik and Daniel. So now you're down to three people left. That's what hurts right now. The Twins, it's always, you know, the twin powers. Because the way those guys played, they were at the top of their game at their best. And the way they've helped the community is right there. And right beside him is Trevor Linden. So you're down to three of all-time Canucks. Now, I didn't get into it as much as you with, well, how did they end it and contract disputes. at the end of the day, any conversation about the most exciting player to wear a uniform stops and ends with Pavel Bure. It's as simple as that for me. Bure's there, so I don't get into minutia of it all. But if I also look at, all right, all-timers, what they did, how they helped the city, where they are, you know, the steamer Stance Mule is there. So your all-time Canucks for me, give me some Sedin, some Linden, some Smeal, and Pavel Bure. I'm not straying too far from the banners that you look up when you walk into the arena. They are all-timers, but it's a different conversation if you need to win one game, because if I've got to win one game, I don't want both Henrik and Daniel. I would just take Henrik. If I've got to win one game, I don't need Stan Smeal there to grind it out. But there's the difference, James, when it comes to all times or best scenario, best guys to put on the uniform. It's a different, but the list that came out yesterday was all-time players. Those are my five. Sedins are always a part of it, and I think that would be the one constant in what everybody would put forth as all-time players.
Do we overlook the fact that Stan Smeal had multiple 30-goal seasons in this market?
Well, I think when you think of power forward, Stan was that guy in his time. You know, in the last 20 years, it's changed so much. But yeah, I don't think Stan gets enough credit for his ability to score. He was the, you know, he was the prototype player in the 80s. Could skate, was tough, could finish, did anything to win, block whatever shots you need. Wouldn't back down. I think sometimes with the finesse of the game now, you forget that Stan had that ability.
What about a forward group up front of Pettersson, Bure, Bertuzzi? Like imagine Todd in today's NHL, right? Where at the apex of his career, he was able to have a 100-point season, generally with what would be described, as I bring it always back to wrestling, a handicap match, right? Two people just hanging off of him. You know what I mean? Like they're like, you could bear hug a guy. You could drape off a guy in the early 2000s defending. You know, imagine Burton in his prime in today's NHL. Wait, is he Tom Wilson? Is he, you know what I mean? Is he the, like, how does that power forward game translate? Is he, you know what I mean? Like, what does that look like?
I can remember, you know, obviously we talk a lot about that Detroit series. I believe it was a Sunday afternoon or a Saturday. It was an afternoon game, I thought, when the Canucks were eliminated. And for some reason, I don't know what I had finished, obviously hanging around doing our stuff. And Bert and his wife at the time were walking to the cars, no one else there, and I happened to be walking back. Listen, and he had just put it all on the line. That was heartbreak for that team to be done. So there's not going to be any small talk. You know, he just looked up at me, I looked up at him, and I just said, you've been the best player in the world in the last 2 weeks. And that was not me sucking up to Bert. If people go back and see what that guy did in that series, like, he was unstoppable. And yeah. I think some people forget about Bert at how good he was when he was on his game and he had that determination. So, yeah, it's tough to tell what they would be. I think Henrik Sedin gets on my list. Henrik Sedin, if you take the top Canucks, go, okay, who was the best skater? Never in that conversation. Never in that conversation for anything to do with shot. Yeah, for passes. But I think Henrik Sedin is in the top of the list for being the smartest player to ever put on a Canuck uniform. Simple as that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking last night, can you imagine Henrik Sedin with Bertuzzi and Bure? Like, oh my goodness gracious. Muscle guy who's flying, and then a guy who's going to get him the puck everywhere. Someone texting in, Gary Suitcase Smith. Yeah. Maybe the best nickname would ever have. He's a good player.
Yeah. 6:43 here on this Thursday morning. He's Perry. I'm James. 6:50. Share with us your top five. Who's on your top five list? Do you disqualify anybody for the bad breakups? Do you insist on them still being there? Do you overlook that? Can you forgive and forget? Or does that play into your top five list? 6:50. We'll ask Berkey his top five coming up when Brian Burke joins us just after 7 o'clock. Alex texting in as well here this morning at 6:50. Alex didn't go so well when it came to washing hands. Went to a doctor a week ago. Had a serious reaction to the sanitizer they had at the entrance. Instant rash around the mouth, migraine, nausea. Be careful out there. Sanitizer, not as safe as you thought.
Boy. And at the doctor's office? Wow. Frank and Polk are reminding us McGillney should be considered. You know what? You're right, Frank. So many good players. McGillney is one of those guys, too. What do you have, 76 one year in the NHL? McGillney could light it up when you had him interested in it.
Yeah. If you did, hey, I mean, look, people will barf as I say this, but how about Messier? You know, yes, no, his best years weren't as a Canuck, but you know, if you take Messier in his absolute prime with a season, like if you're going through the all-time Canucks roster, you take these guys in their prime, you know, for a game seven in a series. I mean, the fact considered an alumni.
Well, then we get into the battle of, you know, best player to ever wear a Canuck uniform. And then you could find, heck, you could make a Matt Sundin argument, but never were they at their best wearing that uniform. So to me, it's no, he had to play 60 minutes in that uniform, and his best times were when he was wearing a Canuck jersey of some sense. Mm-hmm. So McGillney, to me, we never saw the best of Alexander McGillney in a Canuck uniform. Yeah. He was a great hockey player.
I think you have to be the best of Messier. I agree. You have to be the best version of yourself to be considered on that top five list if you're in that said uniform, right? In this case, yeah. It's the Vancouver Canucks. And Messier would not qualify for that.
And with that, James, I actually thought of Christian Ehrhoff last night. Not that I was going to put him in, but the best life of Christian Ehrhoff, the hockey player, was in a Canucks uniform.
But did he have enough time spent here?
No.
Right?
No, and he had a great shot, good numbers.
Yeah, no. And got a hell of a payday from Buffalo, right? Remember, they front-loaded that contract. He got $10 million his first year. You talk about overpaid. You thought Louis Erickson would make a lot of money.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Ooh. What he got paid.
good for him, though, man. Good defenseman here. 646, hey, Major League Baseball, putting the blame game on Justin Turner and then some. We'll get to that story next right here on Sportsnet 650.
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
All right, 9 minutes to 7 o'clock. Brian Burke will join us coming up just after the top of the clock. James and Perry hanging out with you on this Thursday morning. Major League Baseball issuing a statement yesterday after the backlash from Justin Turner's actions, celebrating despite being diagnosed with or testing positive twice for COVID-19. And Turner out on the field still celebrating. You know, sitting on the field, you know, his manager, Dave Roberts, is a cancer survivor, Pear.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great look, right? Like, just not a good look on so many different levels.
Well, we had wondered, right? Like, how did that happen? How did Major League Baseball allow that to happen? And essentially, it sounded like it was going to happen, and Justin Turner was told he can't, and it was screw you. I am going out there. It'll be curious to see how long this investigation takes, but from every possible angle, Major League Baseball had no issue saying, man, we did not allow him. He was just not listening. And I guess Turner's going, well, you know, beg forgiveness or ask permission. He wasn't going to be stopped. And I kind of understood that and can understand being in the moment and just not thinking appropriately. But now we see, when did the Dodgers get back? What comes of that when you know you're positive? And it was a terrible look for Major League Baseball. It wasn't a good look for Justin Turner. You know, it might be a time in 5 or 6 years he'll always have that picture and say, no regrets at all. But he took some heat, and baseball wasn't giving him a pass ball, that's for sure. They threw right at him yesterday.
No, they basically said that, look, he completely disregarded the safety protocols, the agreed-upon joint protocols and the instructions. And then, you know, he decided to leave isolation, entered the field, wrong to put everybody he came in contact with. And then when security raised the matter being on the field with Turner, he emphatically refused to comply, according to the statement from Major League Baseball. And there's the one thing, Pear, just goes to show you, how do you enforce if somebody with COVID wants to do something? Like, if you're a security guard or if you're, you know, a security personnel, and it's like, hey, you can't go in here, you've got COVID. Yeah, stop me. Is anybody putting their hands on somebody who's got COVID right now?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And that's what security, like, kind of wash your hands, like, okay, have at her. But the problem with this whole thing with Justin Turner, here's the sad thing. The Dodgers are an iconic franchise in North America. And a win that took 32 years for a big city, a big major franchise like the Dodgers, this should be an iconic, magical story, right? But Turner's actions overshadowed a World Series win for the Dodgers. That speaks to how appalling his decision was. They got to throw the book at this guy next year.
Yeah, you know what? It took away the moment a couple of minutes later. I don't think people in L.A. are going, oh, yeah, no, I know, first time since 88. Oh, but it really sucked because I don't think it took away from the moment for the players. They probably enjoyed the fact that he is there. The Dodgers have arrived back in L.A. now. You know, you'll see it's taken away the conversation. But, you know, are we talking about the Dodgers for the next day or two after they win? You know, they came off the plane. They had the World Series trophy. I don't think the moment's gone from them. Fans were at the airport on the side, you know, cheering the bus.
Perry, outside of being Dodgers fans, anybody I talked to in the last 24 hours, it was more like, did you see Justin Turner as opposed to how about those Dodgers? Like, that could be a memorable team. Like, that is a stacked roster. Like, a lot of guys could be in the Hall of Fame with that team, with, like, the roster that they have. And we weren't talking so much about the Dodgers finally ending the drought. It was about, man, Justin Turner, what the hell was he thinking?
Yeah, to me, it just becomes the second part of the story. It's the major story for not even baseball fans, just for people. It's the biggest talking point. But baseball purists will always go, boy, that Dodgers team was really good. But we'll remember 2020, as we should, going, oh, yeah, 2020, Justin Turner. That's what'll happen. That'll be more than – unfortunately, it'll be more than going, oh, Clayton Kershaw was great. Although that was the guy with the COVID, right? That's what it'll be remembered for down the road.
That might be the image to best him kissing his girlfriend might be the image to sum up 2020 right now. All right, 5 minutes to 7 o'clock. Brian Burke just around the corner. He'll join us next right here in your home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Let's get it going. It's time to get up.
You don't get to repeat it. It may never happen again because it escaped you the last 32 years. I'm saying to me, I don't give a damn if I got to go on the field and stand away from people. I'm not leaving that stadium.
These guys are here to break it all down.
The NBA continues to want to start playing before Christmas, around December 22nd, 72 games. That would take them right up to the Olympics in July, and they'd be done. Let everybody go play in the Olympics, not have to go up against the Olympics on TV.
Let's have a little fun and make you a winner.
God, I'm going to kill this guy when I get off the phone.
This is The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski.
3 minutes after 7 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. What's going on, everybody? Two sleeps to Halloween. How does that play out this coming weekend? He's Perry Solkowski. I'm James Cebulski. Greg Ballack on the other side of the glass. Brian Burke joining us here momentarily on this Thursday. Francesco Aquilini taking a Twitter yesterday, Pair, and saying, hey, you know, thanks for everybody wondering about what I should do from a business standpoint, but just not interested in the Lions. And that's kind of echoing the same comments that he shared with us when we sat down in studio with Francesco Aquilini 2 years ago, almost to the day, and shared the comments that just it's not something they're looking at. And he said that in 2018, and here we are in 2020 saying they're just not looking at the BC Lions right now.
No, I can understand that. A former linebacker, I believe he told us in his high school days. They'll find someone who will buy the BC Lions, but it's going to be a group of businessmen that have a passion for the CFL. And I think Aquilini, if he had to choose one of the other tenants in BC Place, I think he'd probably lean towards soccer more. Might be able to do something a little more there. But yeah, taking to Twitter just to comment. I mean, I think it was easy for everyone to go, well, you know, you wouldn't be the first owner to go, I want to own every sports team in a city. But right now, I don't think it's anything of interest. He'd rather focus on what's going on. Hey, just coming off that Chris Waldo, you know, I know you have to plan ahead, but, you know, is it a sure thing that we're going to see the Olympics in the summertime? The NBA saying, oh, okay, we want to finish our schedule so it doesn't conflict with the Olympics. I don't know if all of a sudden we're getting people from all over the world coming together to play. Guess you have to prepare for it.
Not at this point. Let's bring Brian Burke into the conversation, who joins us on this Thursday morning. If you're a betting man, Burke, are you thinking that we're going to get the Olympics in Japan next year?
I don't know. I don't bet much. I think, you know, you guys have heard this rant before. I think the Olympics are way too big, and I think this is a perfect opportunity to scale it back to what it should be. The notion that if you go back to the 1928 Olympics at Lake Placid or Berlin Olympics, and you look at the number of events that we had and the world-class athletes that participated in them, and what's happened since then is a proliferation of events. They've added distances. They've added, I think we had a co-ed biathlon in the last Olympics. There was a luge relay in Sochi. A luge relay. You got to be kidding me. So they've added event after event. They've added distance after distance. They've added events that make no sense. I think they had ballroom dancing at one recent Olympics. It's become too big. And the cost of staging and hosting an Olympics, as the city of Vancouver well knows, has become too extravagant. And so Lillehammer and some of these smaller communities, Grenoble, that hosted the Olympics could never do it anymore. So this is a perfect opportunity for the IOC to say, let's scale us back. Like, we're in the Olympics in Vancouver with the hockey team. I think there were 16 teams in the Olympics. Do we need 16 hockey teams in the Olympics to determine who's the best team? Do we need that many teams? The answer is no. And they all have trainers and coaches and people like me that support staff that have to be fed and housed and secured. It's become a just too big an event because there are too many athletes there and too many events. So this is a perfect opportunity for the IOC to say, let's scale this back to a more realistic number of athletes, a more realistic number of events. And I've been on this for 20 years, so this is not a new rant. But are we going to have the Olympics? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, hey, they're running out of cities that want to have them too. I mean, at some point, they've got to figure it all out. You're joining us on a day when we got into the top five Vancouver Canucks all-timers. You would be a perfect guy to ask. Your all-time list includes the Sedins, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I got the note from Mike English about 10 minutes ago, so I haven't had a chance to really peruse it. But my first reaction would be the Twins and Nazzy up front, Edler and Olin on defense, and Kirk McLean and net. Honorable mention to Stan Smeal, who should, whenever you talk about the greatest Canucks of all time, you have to mention Stan Smeal, Pavel Bure, Trevor Linden, Todd Bertuzzi, Jyrki Lumme, and honorable mention Gino as the toughest Canuck.
You know, Brian, you look at some of those names that are on there, and from a talent standpoint, I think there's no question about it, but you know, some people look at Luongo, they look at the recapture wanting out, and they go, okay, well, you know, Kai kind of hurt the team. You had to deal with trading Pavel Bure. Like, how do you look at a situation like that for a guy who obviously on the ice was incredible? Off the ice, I mean, there were the stories about 94, about him holding the team up for a new contract during the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then you had to deal with the fact that he's like, hey, look, I'm done. I'm out. Trade me because I'm not coming back here.
Yeah, it was difficult. So one of my first meetings when I came back in 98 was with Pavel Bure and Mike Gillis, who was his agent. And he said, I'm not going to play. And I said, Pavel, I got you out of your contract with the Red Army. I drove you into Canada. I got his visa in Seattle and drove him to the rink, the old Pacific Coliseum. You owe me more than this. And he said, it's not about you. It's about the Canucks. I want out. I've had enough. And I said, well, I won't get a deal that makes sense until January if you don't play. Why don't you play in October, November? And if I haven't traded you by December 1st, then you can hold out. And he said no. So the deal I made, I didn't get near full value for Pavel Bure, but I got the best I could do with a distressed asset. And I like the players that came back in that deal, but it wasn't a good trade. I mean, I admit that in my book. Like, I didn't get full value for Pavel Bure. When the guy's not playing, the other GMs know that he's not playing, they're not going to give you full value. So I think we made the best deal we could under the circumstances, but we didn't get full value. That was not a happy time in my life. It dealing with Keenan and trying to trade Pavel, and it wasn't good.
Berkey, how long does a conversation like that take place? And is it just you and Pavel, or is Mike Gillis part of it? When Pavel says, no, I don't want to, do you keep on going back to the well and say, hey, have you changed your mind? Or is that kind of a one-off and he's stubborn and then it's all back and forth with Gillis, or you just go, okay, I'm done. I've got to move him.
Well, Mike Gillis was there, as I recall. That's a long time ago, but it was 22 years ago. But I think he was there for the meeting, and it was clear, like, he's not playing. There's no circumstance he would consider playing. And I think I talked to Mike, I think, through that and said, would he come back in November or December? And he's like, no, trade him. And, of course, Mike Keenan was sour because we're playing without, you know, whatever players we would have got back, we would have won more games. We're playing without a nuclear weapon that we can't deploy, and we're playing without the players that would have come back in that deal. So Mike was frustrated, and understandably so. But, no, it was tough. That was a tough – my first year in Vancouver, that was a tough year.
How much was that, Mike Gillis? How much was that Pavel wanting out?
I don't know. I never asked Pavel.
So you don't get to have that kind of, as you said, what a history you have. You're the guy who gets some drives into Vancouver. Obviously didn't play anything, but you know, I guess what I'm saying, there's never just a Brian Burke, Pavel Bure meeting without an agent around at that point?
No. I got sour after that.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. And you look at the kind of the landscape here right now in the National Hockey League. A report was shared on our sister station in Calgary, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Brian, yesterday. And one of the insiders there suggesting that Travis Green and the Canucks are off to a tough start when it comes to negotiating a new contract, with Travis going into the final year of his four-year contract that he signed with the team. From your standpoint, big deal, no big deal right now?
I don't know. I have no knowledge. I try to avoid commenting on situations where I really truly have no knowledge. Like if I was aware of this and knew some background on it, or had talked to Travis about it or talked to Benji about it, I would say, well, here's what I think is happening. I don't know. It's the first I heard of it.
Can you go into a season without a coach having an extension in this final year?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I worked my last year in Vancouver without a contract, and I've had coaches, I'd have to think where, but I've had coaches work in the final year of their contract, I think. In Calgary, like Brad Treliving worked his last year of his first contract. The Calgary Flames have always said, we'll deal with you in the off season. So the GM, the coach, their contracts frequently ran out and then were dealt with in the off season. So some organizations do that as a matter of routine. So I wouldn't read too much into it. If Travis does not sign a new deal, that doesn't mean he's not coming back. It just means they couldn't agree on term or whatever. Like, you have to understand what I think is happening. And I don't know about Vancouver. This is just a generic comment. Mm-hmm. Salaries are being revisited all over pro hockey right now. What you pay a coach is not what you would have paid him a year ago. The revenues aren't the same. What you pay a GM is not the same as it was a year ago. A large number of people have been laid off completely, scouts and player development people. Teams are cutting back. So it is a difficult time to say what's fair.
Well, and that's the tricky part because of the landscape that we're in a COVID world, and not just that, but it's, you know, what does that look like where, you know, Mike Babcock kind of changed the market for coaches going to market, and then, you know, Joel Quenneville certainly benefited from that last year. Barry Trotz benefited from that in the last couple of years. But, you know, what's fair on a market for a coach and even term for that matter, if you're going to test the market now? Because I guess there's also the human element to where in a salary cap world, Brian, you know, you're committed to these players more than you are to a coach. It's a lot easier to change the coach now than it is to try to change the makeup of the room with the players in a salary cap world. Like, what's the shelf life for a voice of a coach now in today's NHL?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I know this. It's different now than it was a year ago. So whatever a coach expected to get paid, and Travis Green has done a good job, and Jim Benning has done a good job. Those guys deserve to stick around, and see where this goes. Obviously, I think the Canucks lost a lot in this last little period. They lost a lot of firepower and lost a lot of ability. But the fact of the matter is that Travis Green has done an excellent job. He's a top young coach. Now, what is that worth? I don't know. I know this. I know it's worth less than it was a year ago. And so the term and the dollar amounts that are paid, not just to coaches, GMs, assistant GMs, it's all changed. Like, it's different now. So if you look at the revenues that the Vancouver Canucks generated last season, and you look ahead and you say, we're probably playing a shorter season. Players have already taken a 30% pay cut. There's a cap on escrow of 20%. Well, escrow is going to be 40%. So they've lost 20% right out of the gate. They took a 10% deferral. So the players have taken a 30% pay cut. You don't think owners are going to turn to the coaches and GMs and say, well, what's your pay cut? So I don't know what the holdup is. I have no knowledge. I know one thing. Coaches and GMs are going to be paid less going forward than they were before. That's axiomatic.
Time is certainly different, but when you were signing coaches, Berkey, what did you think was always fair term for a coach to get his feel on a team? Were you handing out deals that were around the three-year mark for term?
Well, it depends. It depends on where your team is. It depends on who the coach is. I mean, I extended Ronnie Wilson by 1 year in Toronto. I was criticized heavily for that, and I ended up having to fire him. But it depends on where your team is. Like, I always believe, I never fired a coach I hired. Like, in my entire tenure, I never fired a coach I hired. So my view was, I'm not going to fire a coach I hired until I give him a team that's good enough to win. And once we're good enough to win, if we're not winning, I'm going to fire the coach. But until we're good enough to win, it's not fair to fire the coach. And so I stayed with Ronnie Wilson longer than maybe I should have. Probably cost me, but I didn't feel I had given him good enough players to win. Therefore, I couldn't fire him for not winning. And so that's the calculus I always use was, have I given this coach enough to be competitive and to win? Are we playing as well as we could? And I thought Ronnie Wilson had us playing as well as we could, given the players I had given him. So that was my outlook. I don't know what Benji's outlook on it is. I know this. Whatever a coach would have earned, whatever Travis Green could have reasonably expected 12 months ago is different today. It's less money. Is it less term? I don't know. That's up to Benji. But when Jim Benning does his new contract, it's going to be for less money than it was a year ago. The landscape has changed. It's changed in broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been, you know, we have big changes at our state, at our network last summer. And those changes will continue, and pay cuts will continue. That's the nature of the beast. And if you're Chris Brumwell, what you make is different now. So we all have to get used to that. I don't know the specifics on Travis' term or money. I just know one thing. It's going to be less than it was a year ago. It's less for all of us.
Brian Burke here on Sportsnet 650. A reminder this hour, the starting lineup, a presentation of Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus Street in Vancouver, or check him out online at dunbarlumber.com. You know, Alex Galchenyuk's name came up when we've talked over the last few months, that the Wild had kind of made the decision that raised a few eyebrows, that a young player who's only 26, he's scored 30 in the league, he's scored 20 a few times as well, that they walked away from his contract and chose not to qualify him. He signs a one-year deal at a shade over $1 million with the Senators. Is this going to be, are we going to continue to see more and more of this now with, you know, value deals that are going to be out there for teams?
Yeah, I'm not excited about this deal for Ottawa because I don't think Alex Galchenyuk can play center. I think he's a winger. And I think they're signing him as a center. So I'm not that excited about this deal. But it's indicative of what, and look at the good players who aren't signed. Look at the good unrestricted free agents who are still unsigned. Why is Hoffman still out there? And this is what I'm saying. The market has changed, and what players make has changed. I mean, the best forward, two defensemen got paid. Torrey Krug got paid. Petrangelo got paid. The forwards all took a beating. They didn't get the money they wanted. They didn't get the term they wanted. So the best one of the forwards available was Taylor Hall. He signs a one-year deal for $8 million. A year ago, probably would have been 6 years at $8 million. the landscape has changed, and what teams can spend and will spend on players has changed. You talk about a flat cap. Flat cap's 81.5, and they say it's going to be flat for 2 years. I think it's going to be flat for 5 years. Like, I think the game's going to come back. I think our game is great, and people love it, and it's going to be great. But until there's a vaccine and people feel safe going to an arena, it's not going to change. The economics have changed for foreseeable future. The next 3, 4, 5 years have changed dramatically at all levels. What broadcasters get paid, what GMs get paid, what coaches get paid, what scouts get paid, it's all changed, and it's not going to be the same for a long time.
You were once an agent. What would you be telling Mike Hoffman right now? Obviously, he's probably had some numbers presented to him that he doesn't like. I mean, where in the world is that changing from his perspective in the next 3 months?
Well, it may not. And he may have to wait till the season starts. I mean, and a team stumbles out of the gate, and then he gets his deal. I'm told the holdup there is that he's not willing to move on term. He's looking for a minimum 3-year term. Another GM told me that. I don't know if it's accurate. He's trying to get 3 years. But, you know, this is a proven goal scorer, a great power play specialist, good player, good person. Like, there's no issue with him as a person. Good teammate. And he's still sitting there. And so, but this is, it's 2020, guys. This is the most messed up year any of us have ever lived through. And it's different now. Like, and people have to get used to it being different now. I was talking to someone from MLSC last night. What are they going to charge for tickets? How are they going to get people back in the building? What's going to happen? They're all grappling with this now.
Brian Burke, a presentation of Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, proud family owner of BC Company, helping local business since 1892. You mentioned Mike Hoffman is a good person. Boy, we got into a heated conversation this week, and there was lots of talk amongst the NHL about the draft pick of the Arizona Coyotes, a young man who, you know, charged with bullying a mentally challenged African-American. And I just went and said, I don't want a kid like that on my team. I don't want it. And people just, you got to give second chances. I understand, and I'm sure there are teams, and Arizona's one that does it. Where do you sit, Berkey, on a situation like that with a 14-year-old when he does it? From reports, never really apologized. You're running a hockey team. Do you pass over, or how do you handle the situation?
Well, first off, I saw online a letter from his mother that said he had never apologized to this kid. And I stop when you say a mentally challenged or intellectually disabled kid, bullying that kid. And the mom says it continued beyond 14. It continued for 2 years beyond that, until he was 16. I'm out right there.
Yeah.
And then you add a fact that there might be a racial motivation, I'm out twice. But I do believe in second chances. And I have not, I've dug into this. I've tried to find out more what teams knew. The agent sent a letter to all the teams prior to the draft and alerted them to this issue. And if this young man has made amends and apologized to the guy and changed his ways, that's one thing. I have not been able to determine any evidence that that's the case. And for me, I'm out at intellectually disabled. I'm out as a GM. And then if you add there's possible racial motivation, I'm out twice.
I hear you, man. I hear you. I don't care how good he is. And throw in the fact that you don't have, listen, he came, he apologized to my son, we make mistakes. I just think now this kid's in the spotlight, and now you're going, hey, I don't need a character like that on my hockey team, and it doesn't matter how old he was. That's just, and I throw a lot of that on the parents too. I don't need that in an organization.
But there's the pressure on this kid to, you know, the spotlight's on him now, right, Brian? Like it's ultimately on him to kind of show whether or not he's changed, right? Like there's going to be an intense amount of scrutiny on this kid to show he can turn the other cheek for his behavior that he did when he was, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Yeah, no question about it. And there's a lot of pressure on Arizona too. And the spotlight should be on someone who behaved like that. If you want a second chance, prove that you've earned it.
Yeah, we'll see if it happens. If we sent you a L.A. Dodgers Justin Turner baseball uniform, would you wear it?
Yeah, that's really troubling. The problem is, so you talk about stuff, and I have a rule that I won't talk about other sports because I don't know enough. Like, if you ask me, like, I'm watching the final game of the World Series, I can't believe Snell got pulled. But I'm like, okay, I'm not an expert on baseball. I think I'm an expert on hockey. But if you ask me an NFL question, I usually duck because I don't know that much. I know more than a lot of people do, but this one here is where someone violates a protocol and puts teammates and their families at risk. I don't get it. I can't imagine that Major League Baseball is not going to act on this with some severity. That this is not a case of, okay, it's like people say they won't wear masks. Okay, if you want to put yourself at risk, that's fine, but don't put me at risk. Don't put my family at risk. And they said all the Dodgers players and staff and everyone tested negative, and that's fine, but if I were a teammate of his, I'd be like, how dare you? How dare you put me at risk, but more importantly, my family at risk?
You've been in that situation, though. Like, I mean, you talk in your book, that moment you lift the Stanley Cup, and I think you had some shoulder issues. How tough would it have been to sit on the sidelines when you chase that dream and you finally accomplish it?
I get the human side of this. I get that this guy wanted to be with his teammates, but I don't think you get to choose to play with other people's health and their lives. I don't think that's a choice you get to make. You would have had to say, well, if we'd won the Stanley Cup and I tested positive, I would have left the building. And so I don't get to hoist the cup. I don't get that moment, but I don't put my teammates and their families at risk.
Thank you for this. Have a good Thursday.
Thanks, guys.
Brian Burke. I agree with him. Wouldn't have done it. You know what? Once again, James, that's on me. The clock is all mangled. It's 7:27. We'll get to what's going on. Your top five, you heard Berkey's, Texas, 650, 650. And still ahead, how in the world did Charles Barkley save the CFL and one of the greatest trophies ever? Those details still ahead. You listen to Sportsnet 650.
I said, well, I won't get a deal that makes sense until January if you don't play. Why don't you play in October, November, and if I haven't traded you by December 1st, then you can hold up. And he said no. So the deal I made, I didn't get near full value for Pavel Bure.
Now more of the Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
7:32. Looking back at Brian Burke going down memory lane, sharing his stories and not getting full value for Pavel Bure. At the time, going back, 22 years ago. A reminder, this hour is brought to you by Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner, Arbutus Street in Vancouver, or check them out online at dunbarlumber.com. He's Perry Solkowski. James, I'm James Cebulski here.
James, you know what? I remember that was on the first, like, I knew Berkey knew how to play the media. I had him on our half-hour show in Edmonton when there was the lockout, and I think I said, you know, welcome to the show, and then that's all I had to say. For 7 minutes, he went on and just ripped into the players representing the league. But I remember that Pavel Bure incident because the very first media scrum training camp that year for the Canucks was up at Whistler, and they hadn't done that before. And so as all the media gathered behind the Whistler rink there's nothing formal, no podiums, and, you know, everybody's scrunched together. First time to hear from Berkey. You've got this Bure issue. He's not here. And Brian had said, listen, before the mics are going, guys, I'm not talking about Bure. Don't go there. I'm not talking about Pavel Bure. Okay, so he's kind of set the stage for the media. And the first question could have been as innocent as, hey, Brian, you know, great in Whistler. Why the reason to take the team here? I'll tell you who's not coming to Whistler is Pavel Bure. He is not going anywhere. And it was just like, yep, you know how to play to the cameras and the microphones and get your point across. But as he said there, no offense to Eddie Jovanovski, who, by the way, was beaten by Mike Weir yesterday. Jovo said Mike Weir shot -8 in the pro-am they were in. Hey, he got what he could in that trade, but it's too bad. You figure a relationship is worth something, but it's the business of sports, and that's what you see right now.
Well, you know, you look back, and I think the value – now, I think the Canucks kind of missed on their own. You know, they got a first-round pick out of that deal. That didn't turn out to be anything. Mike Brown was a first-round pick, a year and a half prior, Surrey native, and Mike didn't necessarily go on to have much of a career in the National Hockey League in terms of lengthwise. Kevin Weeks obviously didn't turn out to be the goaltender of the future, but his stock was still pretty high at that time. Mm-hmm. And then Jovo emerged into a three-time All-Star. I mean, look, Pavel Bure was the best player in that trade. You look at Jovo's career. I mean, you got something out of it. Dave Gagne, I think, was also part of that as well. And Dave was on the back end of his career, who was a solid. And you look at Dave's numbers over the course of his career. Like, Dave Gagne had a very good career in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. But, just a lot of that didn't translate. Outside of Jovo, nothing really seemed to click here in this market with that Pavel Bure trade. And Jovo, as great as he was, I mean, won a gold medal for Canada in the Olympics in Salt Lake, 3 years later? But still, to try to get market value for Pavel Bure at that time, a distressed asset, as Brian talked about, that was a no-win situation, it seemed like, for Brian at the time.
No, and we saw Pavel at his best. I think, I don't know if he would ever just say that he would want a do-over, but certainly Pavel was the guy who stirred. If you're just joining us, James, some surprising news yesterday, something we hadn't heard about, and we talked to Berkey about it too. Jonathan Davis was on our sister station in Calgary. They got into the conversation about everything that's going on in the Western teams. And here's what he had to mention, and we haven't heard much of it. Travis Green's going in the last year of his contract. He's done a wonderful job. And according to Davis, the word negotiating is certainly something that's going on. It hasn't exactly been a smooth conversation to this point.
They've got a coach that's in the final year of his deal. And, from my sources on the management side, negotiations are not off to a great start.
And that's with Travis Green. Tell us a little bit more about that and the fact that this guy's been pretty good for him. He's really made his mark as head coach. And now all of a sudden we're not hearing the greatest things about a contract extension for him.
Yeah. This is a coach that his team has, the Canucks have, increased their win total each of his three seasons there. I'm not really sure what's going on. The big issue, from my understanding, is term. It's not dollars. I think, Travis Green would wants a lot more security than what the Canucks have initially offered. And, sometimes the first offer isn't the best one, but this first offer, from my understanding, was one that, people, even on the management side, were kind of scratching, their heads, and were surprised that, that there wasn't a better offer made for Travis Green.
Surprised, James?
Am I surprised? No, I think it's a negotiation. I guess here's the thing. Travis has got some leverage in the sense that this team has gotten better under his watch each and every year. And, think of what that roster looked like when he inherited it, right? And, the rise of Pettersson, the rise of Hughes, this has happened under his watch. The rise of Brock Besser and, in terms of the way he managed Brock Besser that rookie season, how critical we were of Travis in terms of, what are you doing not playing him? And it turned out to be a great move. And Brock had a wonderful season his freshman year before he got hurt. And we're kind of still trying to figure out exactly what, Brock Besser is. But, the emergence of Bo Horvat here in Vancouver and under Travis, this young core has blossomed beautifully under Travis Green for the most part. There's been the tough love approach for Jake Virtanen. And as much as Jake drives this market nuts, he flirted with 20 goals this season before COVID ultimately shut down the rest of the regular season. He deserves a raise. He deserves an extension. I don't think anybody will dispute that. I know Travis has got some detractors in this market. I guess the question is what's term look like? If Travis is looking for 5 years, good for him. I don't think from an organizational standpoint, I don't think I want to commit to 5 years with a coach in today's NHL. Not when you're stuck with the players you are with today. You just don't have that flexibility. And from a financial standpoint here in this world now, Pair, is three, how much more term do you want to go beyond a 3-year extension these days for a coach?
Yeah, he's the ninth longest serving coach in the NHL right now, being with his team since 2017. I think the whole thing is it's negotiation. So if you're ever going to ask for the moon, you ask for it in your first offer, going, here's what I want. But if term is the deal, and that's what we've asked you on our Twitter poll question on Sportsnet 650. Okay, so what would you give? Fair term, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years plus. 63-64% if we round it up are going, yeah, 3 years is fair. I think that is fair. I mean, Travis Green, listen, considering where the team is, perfect time for him to be renegotiating. Unfortunately, where the world is, where the business of hockey is, terrible time to be renegotiating. But, you know, we've seen some long-term deals handed out, some big numbers handed out. I think you ask for that kind of neighborhood, but you're not going to get it. I would hope they get this solved, though. It's the first time we've heard of any kind of ripple effect. You know, Travis Green is here. I would think he would want to come here, making sure contract is in the back pocket. And I think he's got a dressing room. You said earlier, you know, if there are some people that are the same voice, you know, the new players, it's not the same voice. There's not a long time serving Vancouver Canuck around here anymore other than Alex Edler. So I think Travis Green's in a good position. Unfortunately, when you're negotiating in 2020, you're not going to see a massive pay increase. And I stand on this. Of all the Canuck contracts that have been handed out in the last two decades, I think the worst one, and hang on, Louis Erickson fans, was the one to John Tortorella, because I was aghast when Tortorella was announced as the head coach and they gave him 5 years.
Yeah.
Lasted one. That was crazy. Travis Green getting 5 years, I just don't think you see that very much anymore for coaches.
Well, and I think that's probably one of those things, like lesson learned from a Canuck standpoint, right? I mean, from an ownership. Oh. Are we going to commit to a five-year contract for somebody? And, you know, hey, look, I mean, Mike Babcock tried to change the market for coaches earlier, you know, a couple of years ago when he signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs for massive term, massive dollars, right? I think it was an eight-year contract. I mean, Babs didn't make it through, right? I mean, Babcock got gassed a year ago, and, you know, here we are now with Sheldon Keefe as the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, Barry Trotz benefited from that, you know, Joel yep. Quenneville. But I think there is, as Brian alluded to, there's going to be a market correction here going forward. Hey, just quickly, Pair, World Junior National Team Selection Roster, Team Canada, inviting 46 names for selection camp coming up next month. Obviously, World Junior is still tentatively a go. We'll see if that changes as the numbers continue to spike. Almost 1,000 new cases in Ontario this morning. We were almost 300 again yesterday. But Bowen Byram on that list. Mm-hmm. You can remember Alex Newhook, formerly in Victoria. He is also on that list, draft pick of the Colorado Avalanche as well. Couple of notable names there. And Alex Lafreniere, not on that list at this point in time. So named kind of keep an eye out there.
You covered that World Junior, didn't you? Drew Lockout, where they just stacked that team because the NHL wasn't playing?
Well, I mean, I look back to that 2005 roster, and that's probably the greatest World Junior team ever assembled. And that mm-hmm. was, you had Sidney Crosby playing on a line with Patrice Bergeron and Corey Perry. Think about that. Bergeron and Perry and Crosby. Like, yeah. That's not fair. Bergeron and Crosby on the same line. Like, there's two shoe-in Hall of Famers. Your other line, you had Ryan Getzlaff, Jeff Carter, and Andrew Ladd. You know, Mike mm-hmm. Richards, who won a couple of Stanley Cups, you know, who was a top five player 10 years ago here in this, like, one of the best two-way centers at the time. You know, Mike Richards was playing with, you know, Sportsnet analyst Anthony Stewart, Nigel Doss, and then you had Shea Weber, Dion Phaneuf. I mean, that was a stacked squad going back to 2005. But it'll be curious to see what this roster ultimately plays out. Jet Wu, not on this list. So for some people from a Canucks standpoint, people keeping tabs on Jet Wu, the former second-round pick, not there.
No. But still, one of the best names ever drafted. But maybe, you know, I think we yes. when Jet Wu was drafted, you needed so much, and it didn't happen. C-Ball, it is approaching 7:45, which means there's no BS, just straight ahead PS. And I'll tell you what, the Grey Cup, it's history. What has it got to do with Charles Barkley? We will explain. That is all ahead. 7:44, you're listening to Sportsnet 650.
Welcome. Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Solkowski, Greg Ballack playing right to my heart here. You know what this is, right?
Is this your Mandalorian or something?
It is the theme to The Mandalorian. Drops tomorrow streaming on Disney Plus. Yeah, I didn't even have to ask for it.
That was just a guess. Yeah. Because someone texted about that. Yeah. You enjoy that. You got The Mandalorian, you got a Halloween. You got a hell of a weekend set for you, hey?
This is the way, man. This is the way.
I tell you what, 7:45, actually 7:49. Let's get right to it. No BS, just a whole bunch of PS for you. Here's what you need to know that's kind of on the outskirts of sports, but very, very important. Shall we begin? I've got Todd Gurley on my fantasy team. Need him to score tonight. Carolina up against Atlanta. He got me two touchdowns on Sunday, but there was a serious problem. Christmas is coming, see you all. Take a listen. Do you hear what I hear? This is the huddle. Sunday, last couple of seconds in the game, Matt Ryan is talking to Todd Gurley. Have a listen.
Hey, don't score.
Yeah, I would
don't score.
Down.
Don't score. Get the first. Get the first. Get down.
Yeah, he scored, hey? Oh, boy. Todd Gurley scored. That left time on the clock. Detroit comes back and wins the game. Man, how much more clear, James, you have to make it? Don't score.
You know, I'm still stuck on the fact that you just played Christmas music, and it's October. There's actually somebody down the street from us that has a Christmas tree in front of their house up right now.
That's wrong. That's wrong.
Yeah, not a lights. Little... A tree.
Wow. P.S. Marcus Rashford of Manchester United, great yesterday with a hat trick. He'll turn 23, actually, on Halloween, but boy, is he making an impact in his homeland.
I once had to go through that same system, and it's very difficult to find a way out. But now that I'm in this position that I'm in, it's very important for me to help the people that are struggling. And that was the main reason why the letter was written.
So he wrote a petition, used social media, over a million signatures, the fifth largest petition ever presented to the British government. It's to help kids get food. There's over 2,000 restaurants involved in this. The government struck a deal that they weren't going to give free school meals. They were going to stop the proposal. Rashford said no. Now he's in an uproar. Now the government is changing. Boy, 23 on Saturday, that's doing some good with your platform. Well done, Marcus Rashford, and taking control of a situation and remembering where you're from and helping out others. Well done on his part.
And shouting out local businesses all around to give them the acknowledgement that, hey, they're stepping up, offering 100 free meals a day until the end of the school term. You know, they're offering 150. You know, a lot of respect to what that young man's doing for sure.
P.S. We wonder when maybe we're going to see the NHL start up again, an exact date. Well, we know this. The National Lacrosse League says they're coming back.
They made just one chase and a shot in front and a goal from Keegan Ball. How about that? Behind the back.
So they make the announcement yesterday that the second week of April, they will start their 35th year. Now, a lot of these teams play in the arenas of NHL teams, and most of these teams don't make any money except for fans coming through the gate. Hey, there's always parameters. I don't know if it's going to happen, but they're at least penciling April and saying, hey, if everything's okay, we'll come back and play. Might be a little bit of pie in the sky right now for this league.
I heard Paul and Gary Gate are coming back to play as well.
Yeah. They're not playing if people can't go watch them. We will see if that happens. Hey, P.S., everyone remembers the 1999 Grey Cup here in Vancouver, right?
It's also trip number 10 to the Grey Cup for the man on the other side, Wally Buono, and his team looking to repeat as champions.
I was being facetious. I had to Google, like, who the hell played in the 99 Grey Cup here in Vancouver?
That was Hamilton and Calgary.
Yeah, it was Hamilton and Calgary. Ron Lancaster against Wally Buono. And the Ticats won. But here's the deal. They won it, but then something happened and something was missing. They needed a savior. It was awful. It was, in fact...
That's terrible.
Charles Barkley was in town. Phoenix was playing the Vancouver Grizzlies. On the night of the Grey Cup, Hamilton wins and they go rip it up around the town. They run into Charles Barkley. They light it up. The Ticats leave the Grey Cup behind at whatever location they were at.
That's terrible.
Charles Barkley the next morning in the limousine gets to the hotel with the Grey Cup and goes, "Hey guys, I think you forgot something last night." Barkley's with the Grey Cup. The Ticats leave it behind. And Sir Charles saves the day and says, "Hey, here's the trophy that your country put so much pride in. You left it behind in a nightclub." That is PS, not BS.
The reason I remember the matchup for that 99 Grey Cup is because I covered the Ticats Grey Cup victory parade a few days later.
Well, and here's the thing. So I could not remember it. So I actually go, and I would have been traveling with the Canucks at that time. And I'm going, maybe I was out of town. And I think I might have been back on that Sunday morning. That was when, and you'll know it from a guy that you do some work with, that was when the Thursday before, the Canucks were in Atlanta the first ever time. They get pumped by the Atlanta Thrashers 6-3. Dean Sylvester gets a hat trick. And that was the story John Shortis always tells. The next morning, they leave Atlanta. We're late for the bus. And Brad May gives me, "Hey, man, thanks for wasting our time," because they had to sit on the plane before media members. And I looked at him and just said, "Hey, man, you wasted 3 hours of our time last night."
Oh, snap.
Which was kind of the way I played the game. Shorty loves that story. And he loved it. Man, took some balls to say that. But Grey Cup was 2 days later. And it was Charles Barkley that saved the day.
There is no BS, just straight up PS here on Sportsnet 650. 5 minutes to 8 o'clock, your Canucks commute coming up in a matter of moments. Ian McIntyre, your Canucks insider here for Sportsnet. Sportsnet.ca weighs in with the latest next right here on Sportsnet 650.
A cup of Joe and the Canuck commute.
Travis Green would you know, wants a lot more security than what the Canucks are have initially offered. This first offer, from my understanding, was one that people, even on the management side, were kind of scratching, you know, their heads and were surprised that, you know, that there wasn't a better offer made for Travis Green.
A five-star morning on the starting lineup.
At I Am Sensational on Twitter. Also texting in at 650-650 on our text line here at Sportsnet 650. Suggesting that I suppose the Flames are going to hire Travis Green next year too, eh? Based on the trend we've seen over the last few weeks, Perry.
Well, they may. Although I don't know if Brad Treleving will be doing the hiring. If they are in a position where they need a new coach next year, then I would suggest everything that he has touched. Your Calgary Canucks have gone the wrong way. Got pretty much everything else. Maybe they see Finn working with Harvey the Hound next year. Then we're pretty much done with Calgary.
Yeah, I mean, there's a mascot that could use a refresh. I mean, they do. They could probably. I think Finn would be a significant upgrade for Harvey the Hound in Calgary. Just saying.
That's tough to change. Remember the Riders tried to change the look of Gainer the Gopher, and boy, it was hit back. They had to go back to the original costume. They tried to change it up. Listen, when it comes to mascots, it's really tough to do something that works. Gritty is the exception, man. Gritty's the king. I'm sure in Philadelphia, there'll be several Gritties out Halloweening on Saturday. Gritty is the San Diego chicken of the 70s.
That's a lot of costume, though. That's a real commitment to try to pull off a costume like that. This is your Canucks commute, by the way, here on this Thursday morning. James and Perry with you. We're going to be joined by Sportsnet Canucks insider Ian McIntyre here shortly. And you know, get his thoughts on what he has seen and what his reaction, I guess, to the early report from Jonathan Davis on the Fan 960 in Calgary. That tough start to the negotiations for Travis Green and the Vancouver Canucks on a new deal. I don't think there's any cause for concern, but as we have seen negotiations go over the last year with this organization pair, there haven't been a lot of wins when it comes to keeping in-house employees. Look no further than Judd Brackett and a story that lingered on all season long before he ultimately left and has now found a job with the Minnesota Wild. You look at Jacob Markstrom. You look at Tyler Toffoli. Ask Troy Stetcher how things went in trying to get a new contract in Vancouver. Ask Louis Domingue. Ask Oscar Fantenberg. ask Chris Tanev. Like, anybody who's been up for a new job or for a new contract in Vancouver here over the last year, yeah, not so much, man.
Yeah, completely different category. And I would just say that, you know, in the world of texting and having sources, I would think when you go back to most coaching negotiations or any negotiations in pro sports, you know, the first one's probably not that good, right? That's why you negotiate. Here's what I would like. Well, we can't give you that, but how about we do this? But you get it because it came out of nowhere. Jonathan Davis with the report yesterday in our Calgary station saying that, you know, he's heard from his sources that it's not great and maybe term is an issue. I don't have any concerns about this team making sure all this is nailed down. When you're talking coach's salary, you're not talking $8 million, $9 million per year. And when you talk about Francesco Aquilini, although like every other NHL owner, I think there's difficulties right now, but you could never say he has been cheap with what he has done and what he has spent. You know, did he want to belly up $6 million for Jacob Markstrom? No. And we would take fan polls for the last 2 months, and no one wanted to go that high. Did they make a negotiated mistake with Troy Stetcher for what he signed for? Maybe. And then they decide that $4 million towards Tyler Foley might be well spent elsewhere, and giving that extra money to Nate Schmidt, there's the decisions. I can't see there being much difficulty at all with Travis Green getting a deal done. First, we have heard about first comment as well. Maybe they're not close, but who's to say this isn't something that gets done quite quickly? But it's a crazy time. You know, maybe Travis Green is better off to just say, hey, I'll just go for a couple years, and then I'll see what's out there and see what the landscape is business-wise for this league.
Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet Canucks insider here, who joins us bright and early this morning. You get all that, Ian?
I heard most of it, yes.
Agree, disagree. There's no issues here.
I'm not too worried at this point. I mean, Green wants to stay and has done a good job. I think a lot of coaches right now are probably wondering why there hasn't been more traction in their negotiations, and it's because there just isn't an urgency for teams, as you say, and the owners of them to commit money right now. And you know, coaches, I mean, this is an extension, so it's not pertinent to the next couple of months, but coaches get paid year round, unlike the players who get paid during the season, and only if there's a season. Generally, the coaches are getting paid regardless, although many of them, most of them, probably all of them, were asked to take cuts or to suspend pay temporarily during the shutdown last spring. But this, I think this will get done. I'd be stunned. Now, the one thing I would point out, though, Perry, if the point you made about Travis Green maybe does a couple of years and then sees what the market is for him, the difference with coaches is they're all unrestricted free agents. You know, if he doesn't feel that he's appreciated in Vancouver, you know, he can do his final year and then choose where he wants to coach. But there's an awful lot of uncertainty in the game, and I think the contract is going to get done. I don't think there's been very much negotiation yet, because it's not like he's out of contract, right? He has a year to go. I don't think there's probably been a whole lot yet, and maybe they've exchanged some ideas and they're not on the same page, but I think it'll get worked out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, I think deadlines create deals, but I also think like the landscape could look very different, you know, by the time that the 2021 season comes to an end, right? Like, you know, we may have fans back in the stands then. Like, that could be a major game changer for finances for NHL teams, for NBA teams, Major League Baseball, NFL teams. Like, that could be a significant difference, as opposed to if we're still waiting for a vaccine by the time that the season ends and we're still in this same position by the time.
Well, we saw the financial drag in free agency.
Yeah.
And that financial drag applies across the board in the NHL. Sadly, we've seen it in front offices where, you know, a lot of $50,000 a year employees have been let go. Almost everyone has had their pay reduced. And we see it in coaches as well. And if Jim Benning was looking for a new contract right now from Francesco Aquilini, he'd be seeing that financial drag as well. So I'm not surprised that there hasn't been a rush, whether it be Travis Green or any of the other. I think there's seven coaches up for a new deal.
Six. Make it six, because Rick Bowness just officially named head coach of the Dallas Stars.
And so good for Rick. That's fantastic. For, yes, in fact, that's fantastic for Rick. Well, one of my favorite people that I've ever dealt with in hockey. But let's also remember, his situation was different. You know, he's not a head coach looking for an extension. He was an interim coach who took a team to the Stanley Cup final and needs to know what he's doing next year, this season, immediately coming up. So that's a different situation as well. But this financial drag applies across the board. And whether you're still an unsigned free agent or whether you're a coach with a year to go and you'd like an extension so you're not a lame duck coach going into whenever next season is, you're probably going to have to wait a little bit right now.
Ian McIntyre joining us for a little Canucks commute. I think if we had to name the all-time five nicest people to stand behind a Canuck bench as an assistant or head coach, Rick Bowness would be part of that. But we're talking today, Ian, about your all-time five Canucks. Berkey just gave his. We've talked about ours. Sedin seemed to be the constant. What would you come up with as a guy who's covered this team for so long about your all-time Canucks, something that was going on social media yesterday, and it's worth a great debate here in this city as to who gets the tap on the shoulder?
Tell me who Berkey chose.
I bring up my phone. He had the Sedins. He had Naslin. Uh-huh. He had Olin. Seabold, do you got it there?
I don't have the exact list, but that's four of them right there.
Did he have Linden?
I don't think he had Trevor on that.
Berkey's top five. The Twins, Nazzy, Edler, Olin, and Kirk McLean in goal. He didn't have Linden.
Okay. That was six, but anyways. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm always, and I've been asked this, I get asked this periodically, just by people who know that I've covered the team almost three decades now, which, again, I have to remind everyone, I started when I was 12. and I always need a criteria, because I don't know what they're asking. Like, greatest players, greatest Canuck. It's the five greatest Canucks, right?
Yes.
Five, yes.
They're, yes. They're not looking for
argued this, too.
Okay. Yeah, you're not looking for D.
Sedin's are tops on both lists, both as players, talented players, and Canucks. And really, there's a gap. So they're one and two, and then there's a gap. And I would go with Naslund. I'd go Trevor Linden. And the fifth spot would go to Roberto Luongo or Pavel Bure. Bure was here seven seasons. Luongo was here eight. Bure is the greatest goal scorer the team has ever had, but didn't want to be here. Roberto Luongo is the greatest goalie they've ever had and happened to be a cornerstone of the most successful Canucks era that there's been. So maybe then I go with Luongo. But if you're asking me who are the most talented players, then Trevor Linden's not on the list, and Pavel Bure is on the list, and Alex McGillney probably is on the list because he was one of the most talented guys who ever played here, and teammates at the time who played with both Bure and McGillney talked about how McGillney could do more, but Bure was just a fantastic goal scorer and a guy who never lost, and this is, I think, why he's in the Hall of Fame. Pavel never lost that zeal for scoring goals. Nobody I've ever covered wanted to score as much as Pavel Bure did, and it drove him through his whole career, made him such a great player. But he was only in Vancouver seven seasons, and I think it was the second or third year he wanted out and eventually left his contract. So I always have a hard time differentiating, are you saying greatest Canuck or greatest most talented player? But if I was choosing five for this list, it's the Sedins and Naslund and Linden and I guess Roberto Luongo.
Does it impact, you know, in trying to make a decision for this? You know, nobody will disagree with Daniel and Henrik being on every, they'll be on everybody's list, but when you, the impact of like the bad breakup factor, right? You know, the Luongo recapture right now, wanting out, you know, Bure and, you know, the fact that he wanted to be traded and basically just stopped showing up until he was ultimately traded. And then there were the reports, and I think they've been disputed over the years, but that he had held the team hostage in the middle of the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. Ian, like, does that factor in the bad breakups? Like, can you put somebody?
Yeah, I guess that's part of what I'm, my reasoning for going Luongo over Bure is, again, I think it's this combination of great player and great Canuck, a guy who loved playing here, wanted to be here. And how players leave. You know, I don't, it's remarkable what happened with Roberto Luongo here, because he was truly one of the top three or four goalies in the game for most of his time, and yet was not especially popular with the fan base. Certainly his popularity with the fan base didn't reflect his standing in the NHL, as good as he was when he was at his best. And it was only towards the end when he kind of lost his spot and you know, suffered the indignity of nobody wanting him, that, and he says this himself, it's, which is partly why it's such a great story. He says himself it made him a better person. It made him kind of realize a little more about what being a hockey player was, and you know, he became more popular in defeat, if you will, than he was in victory. But I don't think many people harbor, in fact, I'd be surprised if any more than a handful harbor ill will towards Luongo for how things went here. And remember, when he finally wanted to play somewhere else, it wasn't because he didn't like Vancouver or love his teammates and want to be here. It was that he had been replaced by Corey Schneider. And you know, people remember the Eddie Lack game in the Winter Classic, how Lack played ahead of Luongo. And yes, that was the last straw. That was the spark that led to him going to Florida with a deal that was worked out by his agent, not the Canucks. You know, it was really, the turning point was when Corey Schneider was chosen to play ahead of him against Los Angeles in the 2012 playoffs. That was the end. It just took 2 years for it to finally end for him. But I think Roberto now, and we saw that on the Sedins night. Look at the amount of love for Roberto Luongo in this place. And he's going to be in the Hall of Fame as well. I mean, it's hard to leave off a player, the only Canuck really, who's in the Hall of Fame, in Pavel Bure. But Roberto Luongo is going to be in the Hall of Fame as well.
I got so much time for Marcus Naslund. Such a great guy. But you know what? When I think of top five, I don't know. Is Nazzy a shoe-in for you?
In the top five? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because he was that good a player. He was that loyal, a captain and a teammate, and he kind of became the player he was in Vancouver. And people forget again how good he was for a few seasons. You know, he was one of the top players in the league. He was voted the top player in the league 1 year by the players.
By his colleagues.
So he was, and of course was the leading Canucks all-time leading scorer when he left, and he was a captain. You know, I had no hesitation. The first three actually are easy. The Sedins and Naslund, to me, it's easy to pick them the first three, and then it's a matter of four and five. And Trevor Linden was just such an incredible servant to the organization and a great player, played on, made Team Canada in the first best-on-best tournament at the Olympics. You know, that's how good Trevor Linden was at one time. And then the second half of his career, he was a different player. He had a different role. But I don't know that anybody is ever going to have, and this isn't hyperbole, I don't know that anybody is ever going to have the relationship with fans and evoke the kind of outpouring of emotions when he finishes his career that Trevor Linden had in Vancouver. Plus, you know, over 1,100 games, a ton of playoff games. I think he's still their playoff games leader by a wide margin. Helped them to the 94 Stanley Cup final. So Linden to me is probably a pretty easy number four for me to put on the list. And then it's almost a toss up between Luongo and Pavel Bure, both great players.
You know, and you know, it's funny how Naslin, Linden, and Smeal all kind of, they blend in together, and particularly Smeal and Linden, right? Both had excellent Stanley Cup runs. Like, both were the driving forces for their teams, and, you know, with a tip of the cap to Richard Brodeur as well in 82.
Yeah.
Another guy
who probably isn't going to make many lists but should be in the discussion, even if I haven't brought him in until now, is Stan Smeal.
Yeah.
You know, Stan Smeal played more games for this team, or as many games, as Marcus Naslin did.
And
with some pretty awful teams and not a whole lot around him in some seasons, and played, you know, just that completely sacrificed himself, literally,
Ian,
and was great
in 82, right? You look at his
numbers,
a lot of guys were great
in 82, but yeah. Smeal was great, you know, through the 80s, and by the end, his body just was worn out. He had literally given so much of himself. It was like Alex Edler, who by the way, is a great argument as well. Matthias Olin. I don't mind Edler in the argument. I'm thinking of Matthias Olin, who, you know, played so hard and gave so much for the organization. When Olin went to Tampa, there was nothing left in his body. Like, he basically just broke down because he had given so much to the Canucks. That's what happened with Stan Smeal. He played so hard for this team, putting his body at risk the way he played, suffered so many injuries. There was just so little left at the end, and his career ended sooner than it should have or could have because of that.
Well, Berkey, and gave a shout-out to Jurke Lumme. He said, boy, that's another guy I'd have to consider when I'm talking about this. Is the one thing, Ian, that maybe excites everybody here? Here we are just, you know, going off the top of their heads, top five Canucks of all time as we do this in 2020. You know, if we were to revisit this in 7 or 8 years, the way the trajectory is, we realize there could be two new names who could be part of this conversation of best ever.
Yeah.
If any indication is what we've seen from Pettersson and Hughes, correct?
I'd go a couple of years sooner, Perry. I mean,
really?
I said the other day on Reach Deep that, I think it was on Reach Deep, anyways, not that the shows blend together or anything, but I said the other day, it sounds ridiculous to say, but Quinn Hughes is probably already the best defenseman they've ever had. Certainly of that genre. They've never had a guy like him. Mm-hmm. And I think you could just argue based on one season that he's the most talented, best defenseman they've had. Well, obviously we need to see more than one season if we're going to put him on an all-time top five, but I don't think we're going to need 7 seasons or 8 seasons to decide. I think we're going to see that. I think three years from now, possibly, if you ask this question again, both Pettersson and Quinn Hughes would be on a lot of people's top fives. Even though at that time, if Quinn Hughes is still 20, 23, 24 years old, Pettersson's 24, 25, if they continue the way they're going, I wouldn't have any issue putting them on a list at that age.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're already on some people's lists already. Hey, look, we got about 45 seconds here, but just quickly,
your reaction, I guess, Francesco Aquilini, responding to a lot of people buzzing about maybe the Canucks ownership should be the ones to buy the BC Lions. He kind of squashed that yesterday on social media. Any surprise or your reaction to that?
I was a little surprised that Francesco came out and basically said they're not interested at this time, because I think they have had interest at times in the past. But this, you know, again, that financial strain we're talking about, it applies to the owners too. In fact, it's probably because of its stress on the owners, it trickles down to everybody else, including those $50,000 a year employees. But yeah, I just surprised he kind of came out publicly and said they weren't interested. I think the Lions, by the way, they're going to find good owners, and whether it's the Aquilinis or somebody else, the team has been left by David Brayley, even though the CFL right now appears to be at another nadir, the way that they somehow became the only league without a season this year. The franchise is so much more robust now, even though there's issues, but it's more robust now by far than when David Brayley came in and saved it. So they'll find good owners who are committed to the team, and we'll try to build it back up here in Vancouver.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to catch up, buddy.
See you guys.
You take care. There he is, Sportsnet Canucks insider Ian McIntyre on top five, Travis Green's contractual situation, and the future of the BC Lions from an ownership standpoint. It is 25 minutes after 8 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. Brian Burke joined us earlier to weigh in with his thoughts on his own top five and kind of took a trip down memory lane in terms of cutting bait and trying to move on with Pavel Bure, the Russian Rocket. That and much, much more all still ahead right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to The Starting Lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
8:31 on this Thursday morning. Shaping up to be nice weather for Halloween, depending on how people ultimately choose to approach Halloween this year. But it looks like it's going to be clear skies, high of 11 that day. Take that at the end of October. That would be
not
a win.
Bad. Yeah. I'd take that. Then you don't have to worry about, you know, have you decided how you will navigate Halloween with the family?
You know what? The kids are at their mom's place this year. And, I think just trying to be mindful of just trying to approach it, you know, go to the places that you kind of know. Like, I went to Dunbar Lumber yesterday, and I got some PVC piping. I've seen some people do this idea, kind of using like a pipe, almost like a little tunnel, and send the candy down a little down the pipe. And
candy shoot.
A candy shoot, exactly. So I got myself about a 10-foot or 8-foot pipe from Dunbar Lumber that's about 4 inches wide. And we'll set that up in the front, and we've got some tongs with our bowl of candy. And if anybody chooses to approach, and we'll set up at the front of the driveway so nobody has to come right to the door. And, and so if anybody wants, we'll send it down the chute. They can put their hands down, and so it'll be no hands-off candy.
I don't know why I've got this image of, you know, this small pipe and kind of like a blow dart and firing snicker shots at kids coming in.
Breathing on candy, probably not a good idea right now.
It's
funny. Like Ryan Sullivan, who works for one of our sister stations, Jack FM, who was also one of the Green Men at one time as well, was on Twitter saying, you know, they bought a 95-piece box of Halloween treats about a week ago, and now they've had to go buy another one because they've eaten them already.
Sure.
And that's you've talked about how you've been so well behaved this year with your Halloween candy. Like, we took the same approach, like tend to wait now until, you know, closer to. And we also bought candies that we're not fans of. Like, I like chocolate. Brenda is a chocolate fiend. She always wants, you know, she always stores chocolate at some point. She needs a little fix in the middle of the day. But this year, we got, like, sours and gummies. And you know what? That box has stayed closed. That box has been closed. And it will continue to stay closed until Halloween, and when anybody comes by, down the chute they go, and we'll have avoided that bullet this year.
So, yeah, you buy stuff that you don't really like.
This is my strategy this year.
And then you give it to the kids in the neighborhood and go, wow, that's Cebulski, kind of cheap over there. Sours, who likes sours? Where's my Reese's peanut butter cup?
I think there's a lot of kids that love gummies and sours and all that. Just it's not my first choice. Like if I had a choice of a Coffee Crisp or a Crunchy Bar, give me a Mr. Big, a Wonder Bar. I'll take the chocolate bar or the candy bar before I'm going with the gummies and the sour keys.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
You got that? Yeah. Pavel Bure was the topic of conversation this morning with Brian Burke and his time. And Brian obviously having to navigate that as, top five lists, greatest Canucks of all time. We've kind of been in the conversation on social media over the last 24 hours. And Brian weighed in with that and also Travis Green's contractual situation. But discuss the complexities of having to move the Russian Rocket.
Yeah, it was difficult. So one of my first meetings when I came back in 98 was with Pavel Bure and Mike Gillis, who was his agent. And he said, I'm not going to play. And I said, Pavel, I got you out of your contract with the Red Army. I drove you into Canada. I got his visa in Seattle and drove him to the rink, the old Pacific Coliseum. You owe me more than this. And he said, it's not about you. It's about the Canucks. I want out. I've had enough. And I said, well, I won't get a deal that makes sense until January if you don't play. Why don't you play in October, November? And if I haven't traded you by December 1st, then you can hold out. And he said no. So the deal I made, I didn't get near full value for Pavel Bure, but I got the best I could do with a distressed asset. And I like the players that came back in that deal, but it wasn't a good trade. I mean, I admit that in my book. Like, I didn't get full value for Pavel Bure. When the guy's not playing, the other GMs know that he's not playing, they're not going to give you full value. So I think we made the best deal we could under the circumstances, but we didn't get full value. That was not a happy time in my life. We're dealing with Keenan and trying to trade Pavel, and it wasn't good.
Berkey, how long does a conversation like that take place? And is it just you and Pavel, or is Mike Gillis part of it? When Pavel says, no, I don't want to, do you keep on going back to the well and say, hey, have you changed your mind? Or is that kind of a one-off and he's stubborn and then it's all back and forth with Gillis, or you just go, okay, I'm done. I've got to move him.
Well, Mike Gillis was there, as I recall. That's a long time ago, but it was 22 years ago. But I think he was there for the meeting, and it was clear, like, he's not playing. There's no circumstance he would consider playing. And I think I talked to Mike, I think, through that and said, would he come back in November or December? And he's like, no, trade him. And, of course, Mike Keenan was sour because we're playing without, whatever players we would have got back, we would have won more games. We're playing without a nuclear weapon that we can't deploy, and we're playing without the players that would have come back in that deal. So Mike was frustrated, and understandably so. But, no, it was tough. That was a tough – my first year in Vancouver, that was a tough year.
How much was that, Mike Gillis? How much was that Pavel wanting out?
I don't know. I never asked Pavel.
So you don't get to have that kind of, as you said, what a history you have. You're the guy who gets some drives into Vancouver. Obviously, didn't play anything, but you know, I guess what I'm saying, there's never just a Brian Burke, Pavel Bure meeting without an agent around at that point?
No. I got sour after that.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. And you look at the kind of the landscape here right now in the National Hockey League. A report was shared on our sister station in Calgary, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Brian, yesterday. And one of the insiders there suggesting that Travis Green and the Canucks are off to a tough start when it comes to negotiating a new contract, with Travis going into the final year of his four-year contract that he signed with the team. From your standpoint, big deal, no big deal right now?
I don't know. I have no knowledge. I try to avoid commenting on situations where I really truly have no knowledge. Like if I was aware of this and knew some background on it, or had talked to Travis about it or talked to Benji about it, I would say, well, here's what I think is happening. I don't know. It's the first I heard of it.
Can you go into a season without a coach having an extension in his final year?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I worked my last year in Vancouver without a contract, and I've had coaches, I'd have to think where, but I've had coaches work in the final year of their contract, I think. In Calgary, like Brad Treliving worked his last year of his first contract. The Calgary Flames have always said, we'll deal with you in the off season. So the GM, the coach, their contracts frequently ran out and then were dealt with in the off season. So some organizations do that as a matter of routine. So I wouldn't read too much into it. If Travis does not sign a new deal, that doesn't mean he's not coming back. It just means they couldn't agree on term or whatever. Like, you have to understand what I think is happening, and I don't know about Vancouver. This is just a generic comment. Mm-hmm. Salaries are being revisited all over pro hockey right now. What you pay a coach is not what you would have paid him a year ago. The revenues aren't the same. What you pay a GM is not the same as it was a year ago. A large number of people have been laid off completely, scouts and player development people. Teams are cutting back, so it is a difficult time to say what's fair.
Well, and that's the tricky part because of the landscape that we're in a COVID world, and not just that, but it's, you know, what does that look like where, you know, Mike Babcock kind of changed the market for coaches going to market. And then, you know, Joel Quenneville certainly benefited from that last year. Barry Trotz benefited from that in the last couple of years. But, you know, what's fair on a market for a coach and even term for that matter if you're going to test the market now? Because I guess there's also the human element to where in a salary cap world, Brian, you know, you're committed to these players more than you are to a coach. It's a lot easier to change the coach now than it is to try to change the makeup of the room with the players in a salary cap world. What's the shelf life for a voice of a coach now in today's NHL?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I know this. It's different now than it was a year ago. So whatever a coach expected to get paid, and Travis Green has done a good job, and Jim Benning has done a good job. Those guys deserve to stick around and see where this goes. Obviously, I think the Canucks lost a lot in this last little period. They lost a lot of firepower and lost a lot of ability. But the fact of the matter is that Travis Green has done an excellent job. He's a top young coach. Now, what is that worth? I don't know. I know this. I know it's worth less than it was a year ago. And so the term and the dollar amounts that are paid, not just to coaches, GMs, assistant GMs, it's all changed. Like, it's different now. So if you look at the revenues that the Vancouver Canucks generated last season, and you look ahead, and you say, we're probably playing a shorter season, players have already taken a 30% pay cut. There's a cap on escrow at 20%. Well, escrow is going to be 40%. So they've lost 20% right out of the gate. They took a 10% deferral. So the players have taken a 30% pay cut. You don't think owners are going to turn to the coaches and GMs and say, well, what's your pay cut? So I don't know what the holdup is. I have no knowledge. I know one thing. Coaches and GMs are going to be paid less going forward than they were before. That's axiomatic.
Time is certainly different, but when you were signing coaches, Berkey, what did you think was always fair term for a coach to get his feel on a team? Were you handing out deals that were around the 3-year mark for term?
Well, it depends. It depends on where your team is. It depends on who the coach is. I mean, I extended Ronnie Wilson by 1 year in Toronto. I was criticized heavily for that, and I ended up having to fire him. But it depends on where your team is. Like, I always believe, I never fired a coach I hired. Like, in my entire tenure, I never fired a coach I hired. So my view was, I'm not going to fire a coach I hired until I give him a team that's good enough to win. And once we're good enough to win, if we're not winning, I'm going to fire the coach. But until we're good enough to win, it's not fair to fire the coach. And so I stayed with Ronnie Wilson longer than maybe I should have. Probably cost me. But I didn't feel I had given him good enough players to win. Therefore, I couldn't fire him for not winning. And so that's the calculus I always use was, have I given this coach enough to be competitive and to win? Are we playing as well as we could? And I thought Ronnie Wilson had us playing as well as we could, given the players I had given him. So that was my outlook. I don't know what Benji's outlook on it is. I know this. Whatever a coach would have earned, whatever Travis Green could have reasonably expected 12 months ago, is different today. It's less money. Is it less term? I don't know. That's up to Benji. But when Jim Benning does his new contract, it's going to be for less money than it was a year ago. The landscape has changed. It's changed in broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Like there's been, you know, we have big changes at our state, at our network last summer. And those changes will continue and pay cuts will continue. That's the nature of the beast. And if you're Chris Brumwell, what you make is different now. So we all have to get used to that. I don't know the specifics on Travis' term or money. I just know one thing. It's going to be less than it was a year ago. It's less for all of us.
Brian Burke weighing in with his thoughts on trying to make the Pavel Bure deal, Travis Green's contract, and much more here on Sportsnet 650. Pair.
Yeah, I make some interesting points. I don't think there's a concern. Ian McIntyre didn't think there was a concern. This stemming from a report out of Calgary. Jonathan Davis suggested that negotiations aren't where they'll be. Travis Green will be here, subject of a poll question. We'll give you that. And, James, you've got some news on the Golden Bear, do you, Jack Nicklaus?
Jack, let it be known that he has voted. Which way is he leaning? I'll tell you next right here on Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the starting lineup with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski on Sportsnet 650.
All right, 10 minutes to 9 o'clock. The Scott Rintoul Show ready to take on over Cebulski and Solkowski. One more day to go. And Dr. Bonnie holding her news conference in Surrey today, Pair, with the latest numbers, as there have been a lot of concerns about the numbers and the amount of positive cases in Surrey these days. Board of Trade.
I like that. I like that move. Yeah, travel a bit. Take it a road show. It hasn't been good out in the Fraser Health region, so go there. Add a little more oomph to the press conference so we just don't get, oh, what's the stat today, la, 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 and move along.
In fairness, so like, Fraser Health is also a massive region, Pair. Like, it covers your neck of the woods. Like, it's Burnaby, yeah. It's the Tri-Cities, it's Surrey, it's Delta, it's, you know, it's out to Hope. Like, it's as much as we look at the numbers and go, oh, man, what are people doing in Fraser Health? Like, it is massive.
No, it is. It's the amount of population where most of the people are. But so I do think, why not go there, right? I mean, we always think Vancouver. Well, Vancouver proper is not that big. You go out there and talk to the people. So I don't mind if it's not an inconvenience for her to be there. And not that it changes what's been going on. I think people have been pretty good with wearing their mask around here.
So last night, Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, tweeted that, hey, get out and vote, people, and then kind of shared where he leaned towards for his vote in supporting Donald Trump, suggesting, hey, he's great, cares, you know, wants to.
Gave
really
me
passionate.
$20 million once.
Well, and there's, you know, there is some history about the Golden Bear lobbying Donald Trump for $20 million to go towards a healthcare facility that he was trying to help fund. But I defer to, you know, a lot, he's taken a lot of heat for this, the Golden Bear. He's 80 now, right? So I defer to Bill Burr and his stand-up comedy when weighing in on Donald Sterling a few years ago for Jack Nicklaus and his political views at 80. I turn things over to Bill Burr this morning.
Dude, you understand? The guy's 80 years old. Do the math. This dude was born in 1934. That's 13 years before Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. First 12 and a half years of this guy's life, he watched all-white baseball, and it was fine. First 12 and a half years, up next, Whitey Willoughby. There's a line shot out to Peter Peckerwood. What a catch! Unbelievable into Chris Cracker. What a great day. What a great day for a ball game. White baseball, white players. Dude, his parents were part of the generation that finished off the genocide of the Native Americans. All right? That's who taught him his ABCs. You know? A, B, C, D, E. Hey, get that savage off my property! Get out of here! I thought we killed all your people! Put a fence around them. H-I-J-K. Yeah. What'd you think was going to happen?
You know what? The owner of the Clippers, you know what his big crime was? He lived too long. He did. If he died around 1969, 1970, nobody would have noticed.
There you go. Yeah. You know, I mean, we shouldn't really be surprised that an 80-year-old white guy is leaning towards a Republican president, right? And a very wealthy 80-year-old white guy.
Yeah, $20 million towards a hospital project that Jack wanted done in his name. So it is. It's an interesting conversation today. And I wonder if Jack knew what he was going to be stirring up when he did it. But talking about it, people don't like when we're talking about it, but it's sports, it's politics, it's all one.
It all comes together right now. 5 days to Election Day, 2 days to Halloween, and one more day to the weekend. We're back at it tomorrow. The Scott Rintoul Show is next right here on Sportsnet 650.